Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
Everyone, and welcome to the Survivor Stock Watch podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Armstrong, and with me today is Brendan. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing very, very well, Taryn. I'm surprised you didn't introduce me as being from the OWA, the hit show. Oh, yeah. Steven, as I saw in the Know-It-Alls, last night, as Steven calls it, the OWA. But I, for me, just the fact that Steven Fishback mentioned me in any context was very exciting. But it is the OWA. But I have to do right by the show and clear that up. But yes. I was very excited to hear Steven sort of mention me.
Yes, you may also see, I think of you as the guy that was on the finale of the Survivor Legacy Watch.
That's right.
That's crazy. Clearly your claim to fame.
How crazy is it that that was the last season of the show? Like that feels like a lifetime ago. And that what we did actually talk about, like the fifth or sixth most recent episode of the show together.
Yeah. I would say it was only like five episodes ago. Well, we are here to talk about episode 5 of season 41 of Survivor. And we're going to be running through the episode, sort of trying to dissect as much as we can from what we got. And then after we get through the episode, we will we'll rate the players based on how well we see them doing in the game. And it's going to be an interesting one with an upcoming not exactly emerge. We'll have to figure out where to go with that. But Brendan, how have you been liking the season so far?
Yeah, I actually have been really enjoying the season. I mean, it's been great to have Survivor back, and it's been really, really exciting. And it's been said a million times, but the show really is singing in these moments where it's not getting dominated by these advantages and these things. And I think having this tribe go down to two really helped that, I think, in that you sort of... It's unfortunate. It's a bit like Philippines. I mean, it's not a particularly, I'm sure, original take, but it's been a bit like Philippines, where we've really been able to watch this one tribe and really dig into the characters and these things, but at the expense of some of the other characters on the other tribes. But I think the show, when the advantages have brought about human moments of strategy, like the great standoff between Ricard and Shan that we saw, which was a great moment that was triggered by advantages and these things like that. That stuff's been great, but it's still a lot of new stuff that is holding the show a little bit back. But again, it's Survivor. It's still great despite any major flaws.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do think that there are some positives. I think the shot in the dark in particular is part of what led to a lot of the paranoia. You know, they have to blindside so that they don't roll that 1-6 chance. And in the fact that there are advantages to hold on to or gift to another person and all that stuff, did lead to that conversation between Shan and Ricard, which I think is great. And the moment before as well, where Shan is stealing JD's thing and stealing from Jeannie as well. Like, there's a lot of great stuff that's coming from it.
and so replacing it with a fake idol. It's like,
it's very fun. And so I can see why they're like throwing as many in there as they can, because it, you know, every once in a while is creating a great situation for the episodes. But it does still feel very overwhelming. And, you know, for as much as I, for me, the main thing is I still don't understand how tie votes work. With all of these extra votes, voting and stealing votes. Like, that's the main thing for me, because there have been so many situations where tie votes could have happened. Like, for instance, in this three-person tribe, if Shan and Jeannie voted for Ricard, but Ricard held on to Shan's extra vote and used his vote and Shan's extra vote to vote for Shan or Jeannie, what would have happened? Yes. I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like the extra vote must transfer to a prospective revote, but we just don't know. We've never gotten that clarification of what that actually is. But it wouldn't. Yeah. I feel like it must act as if you just get another vote and a revote. But based on the rules of the game, there really isn't anything to suggest that is the case. So it's very bizarre.
Yeah, I assume in that scenario, like, and again, this is just an assumption, but I assume in that scenario, it just goes to, like, because the vote's on Ricard and, you know, say Shan, the Jeannie is now the sole vote. And both of Ricard's votes are now nullified, because that's sort of how it's worked before. But
yeah,
like, it doesn't really explain what would work in a steal a vote scenario that we had with Brad earlier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of these different, you know, things, like if the vote wasn't on Ricard and there was a tie vote, would he vote with both of his votes again? Like,
oh, yeah,
all of that stuff is just so confusing. And then you add on top of that how many things you need to keep track of. And it's overwhelming. And I think for me, I'm not too upset by that, unless they're spending too much time in the episode on it.
Mm.
And then the other thing that I'm not like super high on is the balance of it. I think we'll talk about that when we get to Liana's advantage in this episode, because I'm sure, I mean, it's everybody's talking about it, but it's definitely, it's a balance.
That's that. Yeah. Again, and that it's very tough. And it's one of these things where, and it's, this has been said before as well, but it's this whole thing of like, this is a season where the idols were, it was, you know, everyone knows who has what idol, and we'll get into that as the rankings, because normally, you know, having an idol going into the merge would be this huge advantage. And I think certain players are actually going to be hindered by the fact that they have an idol going into the merge, which would not typically be the case.
Mm-hmm. Overall though, I'm still very into the season. I really like the new editing direction. You know, the flashbacks, I like the slow-mo. I enjoy it. I feel like we're getting so many different sort of like character story moments where like they're talking about who they are as people and in their history, and in a way that's kind of like relevant to what we're seeing. So I really feel like they've done a good job. You can almost tell, you know, I think it's, you know, I watch Big Brother a lot, and you know, they edit those episodes on the fly, like every couple of days. And there's not a lot of space for creativity there. Survivor films seasons twice a year. They've been doing that for 20 years. They finally got a break to like sit down and like think of new ideas and think about how we want to like really, you know, change things up and, you know, make things more exciting. And I think their ideas with editing were really cool. They had a bunch of cool pent up ideas about editing. I think they also had a lot of pent up ideas about advantages. They had too many.
Doing them all.
Threw everything in there. But to be fair to them, I think a lot of them are working. So
no, they are, and I'm really excited by the editing. I mean, and they really got me with the Nasir thing. And I think what's really exciting is I was thinking about this when I was watching the episode last night, and I didn't think it was going to happen last night because it seemed like Shan had it on lock and the way that they were portraying it. But do you feel like we're headed for that post vote out editing blindside? Like, do you think that's where we're going? Because all I could think last night while I was watching the episode is, with the way the editing is going, are we going for an episode where Shan comes back, they play out all this drama, Ricard and Jeannie are both talking to her like, I'm with you, we got to get the person out. And then after Shan is blindsided, they do the all the way back where it's like, well, when Shan was on the Advantage Island, Ricard and I made a deal. You know, like, I just wonder if we're going to that at some point in the history of the show, where they're going to withhold a key piece of information until even the votes have been read from us, the audience. I wonder.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think that like they're on the path there. A lot of people have compared this Nasir moment to the Genius.
Right.
And that is definitely something that the Genius would do, where, and you sort of see it here with Nasir, where it's like, hey, he says something. It's like, oh no. And he flashbacks. Like, oh, he found it one day earlier. It's definitely like the genius would go a step further. And like you said, it would be like somebody would make a decision to like eliminate somebody.
Yeah.
You'd be like, what?
Yeah.
You know, extreme ways flashback. And they would explain how that happened. Or even like, you know, in the genius, they do challenges and you go through an entire challenge thinking this one team is about to get beaten. And then flashback at the end as when that team wins, like the whole time they've been playing the other team, playing. So like there are really cool ways to make that work. And it seems like, you know, Survivor has done this thing. They did it obviously in the original Fans versus Favorites. When Amanda found the idol, they'd kind of played around with that before, but it seems like they're a lot more open to it now. And I would love to see them do what you're talking about, but the main thing that seems to be holding them back is that they're not super invested in explaining a lot of these photos.
Right.
Like, we're learning a lot about what happened in these early UA tribals, from the exit interviews, and I've got some information from Jeannie about this.
Well, I listened to Jeannie today and she conflicted a little bit with JD. Yeah. And of course, Taryn, never forget the episode of Heroes, Healers, Hustlers where none of us knew if Ben had that idol. Remember? That was awesome. Who could forget that episode where we had no idea if Ben had found that second idol?
Yes.
Yes.
that would be because I think I think that a lot of times, especially when we're doing podcasts and you know, you're commenting online, you're often focused on the pain points. You're focused on like, what can we critique, about the show, about the season, about the episodes. And like I said, I think advantages are a big one. And I think for me, the other one is the lack of explanation for a lot of the votes. But apart from that, I think they're doing so much right. And I've really been enjoying the season and I don't want to focus on those negatives because I feel like there are plenty of people that are doing that. The cast is so good. Like I said, the editing is so fun and the gameplay that we're getting here, the fact that we got down to three people on a tribe, you know, people have been talking about this hasn't really been seen, many other times in the show's history. And It's so fun. It's a reminder of like, this is why these shows are successful because of the whole sort of concept of it's a group of people slowly whittled down until the end. And it feels so epic at the end where this was a pretty straightforward vote. But I think even without the argument between Shan and Ricard, making it seem ambiguous as to who could go, because I think we all kind of knew that it was still probably Jeannie. It was still tense just because it was only three people. And that's what's so exciting. And that's another thing that I wish Survivor would see and really like latch onto again.
Yeah, no. And it's very exciting and it's exciting too. And it's like, you get this mini game. I mean, it's almost like a full sort of, meal before the real meal, which is the merge. You know, you get to really see six people start in a tribe and see who can actually make it all the way to the final two. And I mean, that's where, and what's great about these votes, you know, we saw it with Denise and Malcolm and Russell Swan and stuff like this. And, you know, the player who's in that position at the final three, where Shan was this week, where they are not going home, is such an impressive feat. I mean, when you can it's one thing to do what Ricard did, which is still very impressive, but to get down to three and then be safe, which I believe Denise was the one that was safe in the Philippines, I believe. It's very impressive when you see these people put themselves in that situation.
Yeah, it's made me think of an idea for a season. It doesn't have to be Survivor because you know, they have limited time with their episodes. But what about a season of a show like let's say it's Survivor. Let's say it's you know like Australian Survivor where they've got like you know 90 minutes. So,
And they had 6 month season, so it's like they could do everything.
Yeah, and it's like a three tribe or a four tribe season where every single tribal, all four tribes go to tribal,
right?
And they all vote. And so then it's all four tribes whittle themselves down to like however many tribes down to like two or three players or even one player.
And then
the survivors of each tribe all merge together. And it's like it's an all-star season of its own season.
Like
all of the winners of their tribe are now facing off against. I think that would be very fun.
No, it would be very fun. Anything like that. Again, it's that whole thing of like even something where you could have the two. I've always thought it'd be great to do. And again, people have talked this like the secret game, you know, where there's two games going on and you make it to the end and you think, oh, I'm merging. And it's like, no, you're actually just a new tribe that has to face a whole new tribe, you know, that you didn't even know about. And those things are really fun. Yeah, it would be great to see something like Australian Survivor, which has the extra episodes and has the extra time, play around with something like that. I feel like that's one of the first, when you look at just the amount of people they have, I almost feel like Australian Survivor is one of the first shows, iterations of the show, where you could actually see that happening. Mm-hmm. Because they have 24 and they have these extra things. Like,
yeah, they go wild with their all of those. all right. Well, that's, look, I was so many thoughts on the episode. Yes. Let's get into the episode. We start off, you know, at Uwa, and I've learned the tribe names enough now that I can't say green. So I'm now saying right as they're about to disintegrate. We start at Uwa, the green tribe. And Jeannie talks about how she was on the other side of a blindside, the tribal before, which usually means you're at the bottom of the tribe, but she feels really good after the last tribal where they just voted out JD. Now in exit interviews, Jeannie, called JD delusional. And said directly contradicted his statement about the previous tribal where he claimed that he approached Jeannie about voting Ricard out, but she wasn't down. She said, of course I would have been down. I was definitely down to do that. That's not what happened.
Yeah, I heard that today. And that was fun. And it was fun because listening to the episode, she sort of listening to the exit interview, she took a moment with Robert. She was like, well, you know, that is a lie. It's interesting. I guess Jeannie should have realized that it's every other vote that she's on the wrong side of the numbers. If she was she was blindsided at 5, then she was on the right side of 4. She needs to realize that. Well, I guess she was blindsided at 6 too, though, because she voted for Ricard.
Yes. So she actually also explained that one. She basically confirmed Brad's story that in that first tribal, when it was a live tribal, Brad did come to her saying, let's drop the hammer on Ricard. And then she just literally didn't hear JD saying, no, we're still sticking with Sarah. So she thought they were voting Ricard out in that moment and voted Ricard out. I will say as well, in terms of like who's got the right side of the story, I'm inclined personally to believe Jeannie because she is very willing to admit her faults in like every other area and you know, all of these things. And it's also in line with what we saw in the episode. So you know, it's I believe that JD was maybe exaggerating a little bit.
He may have been. And this is what we saw, right? Is that this is the brilliance of Shan, is that like, you know, a lot, when you look at Jeannie, and I think this week she didn't play very well, but a lot of the reason she was in the situation she was this week was Brad trusting Shan too much, JD trusting Shan too much. I mean, it's like she talked about that the exit interview. She thought she and Brad were tight. Well, Shan was the one Brad explained his trip and that he had the trip to the island and that he had the, you know, the extra advantage and all this different stuff. So yeah, she was kind of, her hands were tied a little bit by some of the other players. Not that she necessarily would have made a move, who knows, but she certainly didn't seem to have the opportunity. I believe that she didn't really have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah. So she goes off looking for an idol and she finds the Beware advantage. She says in exit interviews that this is her biggest regret. She played out of fear. She found this thing and she saw what happened to Brad, did not want to take it for fear of losing her vote here. And I think that's pretty fair. Now, I will say this. She knows that she knew about the extra vote. Everybody knew about the extra vote. And she also knew that Shan got the extra vote from JD. So she knows that Shan has the extra vote. So I imagine she's thinking, if I take this and lose my vote, then, you know, it could maybe be like a 1-1 tie if Ricard is voting me out and Shan is voting Ricard out. But then it would be Shan still being the sole vote. And so Shan wouldn't even really need to lose. It's really, if Shan is with her, she should still be good, even if she does lose her vote. But she probably feels like she wants to at least consult Shan. For me, I think the you know, consulting Shan, not a huge mistake for me. Consulting Shan and Ricard was a little bit suspicious to me. Not suspicious. It was a little bit, you know, I don't know if she was thinking in the right terms here by going to both of them, especially knowing that they're so close. I think if she confides in Shan alone, This might turn out a little bit better for her.
Yeah, I think so. At the very least, she'd have a better sense if she was the kind of player who could read someone, right? She could actually talk to Shan one-on-one and try to get a read on if Shan is genuinely excited or what she's doing. When it's in a big group, it's kind of now this big group tribe interaction. And so I think it would have been harder for her to really discern if she could trust Shan or not, not that she was necessarily playing that kind of game. But yeah, I mean, I think it's so tough, right? And it's the same thing with Ricard about whether or not he uses his, you know, extra vote at that tribal to save himself. You know, Jeannie was playing under the assumption that Shan was with her. And so she felt like she didn't need it, you know, and that's just, she played really just had completely the wrong read. And you know, so it's tough to see and it's tough to know, because it's that thing where we have all the information, and obviously Jeannie made objectively such a wrong move by not just ripping open that idol. But you know, in her mind, she was fine. You know, and if Shan had been closer with Jeannie and Ricard had not played the extra vote, we'd be like, Ricard, you idiot. You know, you know. So it's tough.
Yeah, and honestly, it's hard to blame her for not opening this beware advantage. I mean, they've gone through now four tribals, you know, four separate immunity challenges where Luvu has not come close. They've not said their phrase once. There's not a lot of reason to believe that out of nowhere they're gonna now be able to say their phrase and find their thing. So I can see why she'd be worried about that. For me, it's that, you know, taking a step beyond that, her vote isn't, again, all that important, mm-hmm. just like Brad's wasn't all that important. The reason Brad's vote mattered is because it prevented him from using his other advantages, right?
Right, right.
Her vote alone didn't really do much for him. And Jeannie didn't have any other advantages other than her, you know, shot in the dark, which she doesn't use anyway. So taking that into account, you probably should just open it, but I can see why she would have been worried.
Yeah. And also this scene where they all had the idol and they're all looking at it and like nobody touch it. I feel like advantage I'd love, something I've always thought it would be fun if they played around with, and they're sort of playing with this with the shot in the dark, is I always thought it would be great if the day one you get to the beach and there's just an immunity idol sitting in the middle of camp, like a hidden immunity, like right there. And it's like, obviously, like it's you can just grab it anytime you want. There it is. It's not even a one vote. Like it's a full on, like this is an immunity idol. To be played, you know, like but you know, it's right there in the center of the tribe. So,
yeah, that would
I love
be
the idea. Fair. Yeah, it's the first day you'd never do it, I guess, unless you're Tony in Game Changers. But like, you'd never just take it in front of everybody.
Yeah, I think if you could find a way to like make sure that it's like everyone's sitting around, and, like you really have to like grab it in front of everyone. Like that would be interesting.
Sure. Yeah, what's in center of camp? It's almost like if the only way you could grab it is either at night when everyone's asleep or like, yeah, you know,
like, maybe if it was like hanging, like you have to like climb something to grab it or like, you know.
Yeah, and maybe like, you'd have to put someone on watch, like no one would be able to sleep at the same time because someone has to stay up and watch the watch the idol.
So Shan says, your vote is your voice. So we should not touch this. In case Luvu has not found theirs, she says to us, she doesn't want anybody in the game having more power than her. So she wants it herself. And so her idea is that she can give Ricard her extra vote, and then take this beware advantage, lose her own vote. Ricard still has two and it's probably fine. And again, depending on how the tie vote situation works, and I assume it works this way, he probably wouldn't have even needed that vote. As long as Shan hides the fact that she doesn't have her vote and Jeannie's going to vote with Shan against Ricard, then it's Jeannie voting against Ricard, Ricard voting against Jeannie, tie vote. That actually is the worst way. You want Shan to be able to vote. You'd then give Ricard the lost vote, or you'd find a way to get Jeannie to vote with Ricard against Shan. So that Ricard has no votes on him, he is available for a revote, whereas Jeannie would not be. So there is a way to play that without having to burn the extra vote, but giving him the extra vote as a precaution, not the worst thing in the world. My thought was like, why did she need to give him the extra vote prior to taking the beware advantage? Is it like you're not allowed to give it to another person once you've already lost your vote? I don't think so. So I think probably she should have held on to it until after she knew that it wouldn't be activated.
Yeah, I agree. I think they talked about this a little bit last night, the know-it-alls. It's like, you know, there doesn't seem to be a reason unless Brad losing certain privileges they spooked them. I don't know. Maybe they, you know, because that was confusing to me too that week where Brad suddenly couldn't was it that he couldn't steal a vote because he didn't have a vote? Was that what it was, yeah, or something like that? Which kind of doesn't make sense, actually. Like, wouldn't when you don't have a vote be the greatest time to use the steal a vote? But I don't know. But yeah, so maybe they were just spooked by that. Maybe, yeah. What?
It's like society. You're a lot more capable of stealing other things you've already got. Oh,
yes, that's right. That's right. It's a microcosm of, you know, yeah, life. And yeah, no. So that's the whole thing, is it's like the rules there are unclear. And who knows? Maybe they were also unsure of what it was. But yeah, it doesn't really seem to make much sense till they get back to camp and she knows that she's lost her vote. Yeah, that seems like it would make more sense. But I don't know.
And then we get into another weird situation with the rules, because my thought was, well, how is Shan going to say her phrase without tipping Jeannie off? And I immediately thought, oh, well, they can tell her that they're doing it as a smokescreen to suss out if other people have it. And then I thought, there's no way that they're allowed to do that in the rules, right? Because if that were the case, then and they genuinely didn't pick it up and Shan said her phrase, what happens now? Does Nasir and Xander go back to camp thinking they have an idol that works, or are they informed it doesn't actually work? Somebody faked the phrase. Then when Shan picks it up the next time and says her phrase, do they now can it work? But now why are we saying it again? We've already said it. We don't need to say it again. Like, it leads to a bunch of weird situations who knows how that would work. So I kind of felt like it might not be in the rules to allow for something like this if they actually didn't have it, but perhaps because they did actually have it, it was in the rules. But if I were Jeannie, I'd be wondering, like, how does this make sense? How are you allowed to do this? And I'd probably be asking the producers, like, are you allowed to do this? Like, why are you allowed to do this? How would it work if it went this way? How would it work if it went this other way? So that was a whole thing. But Ricard comes up with this idea that he wants to tell Jeannie that they're going to essentially fake say the phrase, but actually really say the phrase. And he tells us that him and Shan are running the game. And that the Jeannie is she's a spare tire that they're going to leave on the side of the road, which was, you know, a little unnecessary. he didn't have to go that far. I mean, Jeannie seems very nice. I think Jeannie is at the very least a regular tire, not a spare tire, like a good solid regular tire. Doesn't have to be left. Also, do you leave spare tires on the side of the road? Don't you leave the regular tires once you've replaced them with the spare tire? Why would you leave a spare tire on the side of the road? That makes no sense to me in any way. This is me just continuing to vamp as I wait for Brendan's internet to get back over here. But that's what's going on over on the Uwa tribe. And I mean, it was a great segment. Lots of interesting stuff going on here, of course. Stealing an advantage in idol, very fun. We head over to the Luvu tribe and we open with Sydney, having a segment here. She's catching a fish. She's talking about being, like a provider, being somebody that catches fish. It's very disconnected, from the rest of the episode, from even the rest of the segment about this tribe. There's no strategy in it. It's pretty much the only just like solely character focused moment in the entire episode, which was really strange to me because we've spent so much time on Sydney over the last five episodes, not always when she's relevant. In fact, only a couple times has she really been super relevant to like the plot line, but we continue to go back to her. And it, especially in a spot where like this whole tribe, you know, Erica basically gets no airtime, Heather basically gets no airtime, but we keep coming back to Sydney, which would normally for me indicate like this is potentially, you know, a winner edit where she is having to be brought up in a spot where they're not going to tribal ever. But she also appears like she's kind of a villain. Maybe not like overly so in the episode so far, but I have noted over the last couple of episodes that that she doesn't seem to be like the hero of the story here. So I'm very curious to know where Sydney fits, especially once we hit this merge, how she fits into the storyline, why we've focused so much on her. You know, is she just going to be like the big merge boot or something along those lines? And that's why they've been building her up. Or is she like a long-term character villain, even maybe a finalist? Who knows? Who knows at this point? I don't know. There's too many options, but that's what Sydney's up to.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Danny is going to talk about how he is a little bit concerned of about the gender divide in the overall. So we saw this in the in the preview for the for this episode, that he was talking about the gender. We were like, why does that make sense? Why are you talking about gender on his tribe? He's talking about the other tribes. It seems like a lot of men have been voted out of other tribes. Now, we know that's the case over on Yasa. On the Uwa tribe, it's just kind of been, you know, what it is, right? It hasn't been specifically targeted toward the men. On Yasa, it was, though. But it's something that Danny has noticed, and he seems to be concerned about it. So I was interested by this as well in terms of the edit. Trying to read into what's going on Luvu has been really interesting, because they haven't been to tribal, and so anything we get from them is like very directed in terms of what they want us to think, not what they had to show us, right? So the fact that Danny was shown to be kind of against throwing a challenge in the previous episode, but in this one, he seems to be the one pushing it, especially when it seems to be against Nasir. It really does throw me off again a little bit when it comes to Danny, although I think the fact that we see him again is still probably pretty good overall. But him and Deshaun are going to pitch to Nasir that we should throw the challenge. And I thought it was interesting that they were pitching this to Nasir. I don't know if they were pitching it because they thought, this Nasir guy, he is too good at challenges. If we don't have him on board to throw this challenge, then he's just going to win it for us anyway, and we're not going to be able to actually throw it. Or if they genuinely felt like they were making inroads with him and wanted to bring him in on this plot. Because again, we were wondering in the last podcast, like, what was it about the plan here with Danny, Deshaun, and Sydney, where they thought for sure that they had the numbers locked in if they threw that challenge? Maybe it was Nasir. Maybe they thought Nasir is the one they had. It's so hard to know because we've seen so many different things when it comes to who this tribe is targeting. You know, it's been Nasir, it's been you know, all kinds, it's been Heather, it's been Erica. So I don't know who exactly they feel like they have for sure, but it seems like they're approaching Nasir about this Nasir, though, says no to throwing the challenge. He says he hates it when he sees people throwing challenges on the show. And this, to Danny, is an indication, again, I guess, that he can't work with Nasir. And he tells us that in the confessional. He says, Nasir is not somebody that I can work with. But Nasir feels great. He's like, they're coming to me and listening. When I say I don't want to throw the challenge, they're like listening to me. And the fact that they came to me with the idea in the first place tells me that they trust me. And it's like, oh, Nasir, like everything with Nasir is like one step forward, two steps back. And it is, he got in with them to the point where they were willing to pitch him on this idea of throwing the challenge.
Hey, sorry about that.
No worries. Brendan just is back.
My internet went out and then my hotspot didn't work, so I had to get a portable one, but I'm all checked in now. Should be fine. No problem. The hotel Wi-Fi has been a bit weird here, but
on a solo update a little bit there.
That's right. All right.
I'm talking about how they pitched Nasir to throw the challenge, but he wasn't down for it. And Danny now feels like, they trust him enough to pitch it to him, but because he wasn't on board, it's now sort of again like, okay, well, now we can't work.
Yeah, it's interesting. It feels like every episode he seems in with those guys and then out with those guys and with those guys and out with those guys. It's very hard to track. And that's why it's very hard to predict where Nasir is going to go after this, because my instinct is based on you know, how he's behaving. He kind of thinks that they're just going to be that tribe strong. I think that seems to be what Nasir's game plan is, even though early, right, in the first episode, he was talking about targeting them or whatever, one of them or whatever. But it seems like that's his plan, is that they're just all going to win the challenges. And then that tribe of six is going to get down to with how good he is at challenges. Maybe that's not a bad strategy, especially now that he's an idol. I just don't think that's going to work with the way that he's set up socially in the tribe.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this later as well. But I think I think it bodes very poorly for him that he's probably going to be loyal to his tribe, and that there are people not on his tribe that may have the ability to take away his toys. But that's what's going on over on Luvu. We head over to Yasa to get an idea of what's happening over there. And it's been a little while since we've gotten a real strategic update from Yasa. The last time we really checked in, it seemed like Evie was in the center of the tribe, was the one running things. However, that seems to have shifted. Evie tells us that they still do feel like they're in charge. They have Evie, or they have Xander, thinking that they're his number one. But Tiffany doesn't feel great. Doesn't feel great about Evie. Feels like Evie is too chummy with Xander, and that they can't trust the two of them. So Tiffany and Liana have a discussion about this and go through Xander's bag, which I didn't really understand exactly why they needed to go through Xander's bag. They already knew about these things, but they do.
Yeah, survivor rite of passage, I guess. Like, we got to go through his bag, you know? I don't know. So that excitement. I think the interesting thing that comes out of this episode is trying to wonder if Liana is closer with Tiffany or with Evie. And I feel like that's not something, and maybe I just missed something, but that's not something that I was totally clear on watching the episode.
Yeah.
It seemed like this episode that Liana was closer to Tiffany. And in the previous thing, it felt like Evie, like they were in the same situation that Shan was in, where they were the closest person to everyone. That's what it felt like. In this episode, I wasn't so sure.
Yeah. So in the premiere, they do present it as Evie and Liana are closer, are a pair, are a duo. They haven't really touched that since then. The implication of this episode does seem to be that Liana has grown closer to Tiffany. For me, it was the fact that when Tiffany was like, let's check through his bag, Liana was like, thank you. She really wanted to, like, she was not like the one being led by Tiffany with this. And Liana has also expressed to us that she really regretted not voting Xander out. She felt like that was a mistake. And so perhaps this Xander thing has gotten in the way of their relationship. But without a real update from Liana about her loyalties to Evie, I'm not sure that we can really make the jump yet. That she's not completely loyal to Evie. However, I do think that what we'll see later on with Liana and Shan is probably an indication that it might not even matter who Liana is more loyal to between Evie and Tiffany, because probably will end up just being Shan.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this for Evie's game and whether or not it would have been better for them to have had the tribe whittled down. You know, like it seemed like Evie was in that spot that they could have survived all that, you know, especially if they'd taken out Tiffany or something at four and then it was Xander and Liana or whatever. And it'll be interesting to see what happens going into the merge now that Liana is getting closer to Shan, and Shan will probably potentially have a slightly smaller target being from the smaller tribe.
Yeah. So very interesting stuff there. We get this fun sort of back and forth. And I'm curious to know exactly when this happened, because this feels like something that probably should have happened like 5 days ago. We get this back and forth of like Xander and Evie talking at the well about like, should I bury the thing? Like,
oh, yeah.
Bag. And they go through it. And Evie's also suggesting to Xander that he should tell the others about his advantages as a way to gain trust, knowing that Evie has already done this. They've already ratted him out. So it's like him doing it. But he says that he only wants to tell Tiffany. He says he's sure of Evie, himself, and Tiffany, but he's not sure of Liana, which is the first time I've ever heard anybody speak as though they don't trust Liana, which I thought was interesting. So he does go to Tiffany and he tells Tiffany about the idol, but he pretends this is a key mistake. And it's a double mistake because he tells Tiffany that he just recently found it. And it's a double mistake because, as I said, Evie has already told Tiffany long ago that Xander found this thing. So he's already been caught, but he's also doubly caught because there's a way that Tiffany can out him without even having been told by Evie, which is the fact that he said the phrase, the butterfly phrase.
Yeah.
And she calls him out on it.
Well, this is the problem, right? Is that even though he was already exposed, there's an opportunity where if he comes to Tiffany and comes clean, she could take it as, well, now he finally trusts me because I knew, but now he's coming to me with the information. And so we must be good. And even though I'm still suspicious of him because he didn't tell me earlier, he's telling me. But when he comes to her and then lies, you know what I mean? It's like, it's worse. It's almost as if it's better as if he had said nothing.
Yeah.
It's just totally, he's made trust less firm by playing her in this way. And of course her reactions were great in this episode.
Exactly.
And she was over him quick.
Yeah. She was over him.
She was over him a lot. It did not, they're not closer after this, moment.
Well, there's like a baseline level of like, if you don't get close to somebody, they cannot trust you. But all it takes is like one conversation to be like, what idiots we've been, we should be closer. Yeah. But when that conversation is fraught with lies, now that bridge is, it's already burnt. And there's no other bridges. Now it's like, okay, so not only did I not really talk to you much and didn't tell you things before, but I also, when I finally did, I lied to you. And so now I'm coming to you hat in hand.
Right.
It's like, all right, bro.
Yeah.
So definitely big mistake, especially from somebody like Xander who, you know, prior to this moment, it seemed like his only real mistake had been trusting Evie too much. But otherwise, he was pretty beloved on the tribe. Seems like potentially might not have his head in the right place at this time.
Yeah, and I would give him credit that him being suspicious of Liana is the right read. She wants him out really bad. So we can give Xander some credit there for sussing out that the person who wants him out the most is Liana, but unfortunately for him, he might not be able to do much about that. I guess we'll have to see. But it's interesting storytelling. It's good storytelling from Survivor because we had that thing where Liana was so upset that she couldn't take out Xander, and it felt a little bit like, oh, okay, all right, like that. It felt a little bit out of nowhere in that moment, and now we're seeing the payoff where she has this advantage now, and she can maybe make a run at him. So it's interesting to see some of those early scenes. We're starting to see the foreshadowing they were doing.
I liked Xander's, what Xander says to us is after he gets caught lying, he says, you know, she works with kids. It's her job, literally her job, to forgive kids. So hopefully she'll forgive me.
It was very.
I feel like that's the opposite of the fact that it's her job to do this. It's probably the opposite of what you want here.
Yeah, it feels very like he wanted those. Xander, did you lie? Did you lie to the tribe? He said, you know.
Like she's probably had lots of experience of kids pretending like they're sorry and then lying to them again and again and again.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. She's probably used to kids lying to her about butterflies.
Exactly. Well, speaking of butterflies, we do get to the immunity challenge. And this is when we get the great moment in the episode, of course, which starts off with, and this is again, like, it, these are all very obvious. The fact that Shan is now saying the broccoli line that Brad has already said is so like, I can't imagine that anybody is thinking this is just a normal conversation, no matter how well they do it. But I do think they did it pretty well. And I think it also helps that this is what Brad said about broccoli.
Yeah, we ain't got no rice. Yeah.
You know, Clark. Oh, sorry, Brad.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff. You know, I was hoping it was the salt water that was making my clothes baggy. But the fact is, I'm just turning into a little bit of a twig and just kind of a fuzzy top. I feel like a broccoli. So broccoli is grows little bunches on salt trees. So I feel like a little broccoli tree, I guess.
Who would have guessed?
Wow, that's
hearing the line even so much.
It's even worse than I remember. See, he might have you know, hit it. He might have hit it really well, you know.
Yeah,
oh my,
I mean,
Brad is the broccoli tree.
Yeah, if he had said it the right way, it would have been so much worse for Shan. But Shan gets to say,
she's vegan. She's losing her mind. She thinks everything's food.
Yes, I was like losing my mind. I didn't realize it until just now, but broccoli are just small trees.
It's okay, actually, there you go. How hard was that? Brad gave like a full monologue. He was like, you know, that was like unbelievable.
I feel like a little broccoli.
I am a broccoli tree. And then he's like, broccoli grows on trees. Wow, that was even more detailed than I remember. He said everything about broccoli but what he was supposed to say.
Yeah. And Ricard really nails this as well. And the fact that Ricard is taking the lead on it, I think really helps. Although it does definitely, the downside to it is that anybody that knows this phrase is coming, it's now very much broadcast the fact that he was in on it. And that he knows about it and that they're that close, right? You'd assume that anyway, based on the fact that they're the two people remaining from their tribe. Yeah. But you can't even play it like, oh, I have an idol and he doesn't know because he helped her say the lines. But he continues. I thought this was brilliant.
We're a little rough. I think, you know, we're all just trying our best. We have no rice. He was talking about ladybugs being his dead relatives or something.
Actually, I said I truly believe that butterflies are dead relatives saying hi.
Oh my goodness. We're all going crazy.
Dang, it's ladybugs. So that, and Xander immediately knows what
he knows.
Oh, no, actually, it's, I said butterflies.
Yes. Our dead relatives. No, it's really brilliant from Ricard. And imagine if someone was trying to do this to Brad. Like, what were you saying about trees? He'd be like, I have no idea. Like, I can't.
He wouldn't even. I'm a little broccoli.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, what was it? What was it that you were saying, Brad? He would have been like, I have no idea. No, but no, this was really smart from Ricard. And that has been a fun aspect of this twist. Because in the early part of it, it was like, wait. So they're going to have to like say this exact same phrase every single time. And it seemed like it was almost going to just be like absurd. And it has been fun to see the way the castaways have worked around that and have sort of come up with new and interesting ways to keep it going. And probably Survivor never thought it would take this long. They probably assumed that it would be found sooner. But, you know, it's been fun to see the castaways sort of work around that in different ways.
Yeah. So then we get to this, because we're expecting that, okay, obviously these two are going to say their lines. But then nobody else is going to say their line because Luvu hasn't found their idol. And Jeff is about to, it works out perfectly the way it happens.
Yeah.
Because Jeff is about to, continue on and then.
Hi, Jeff.
Yeah.
I am as confused as a goat on AstroTurf.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was exciting, and I wasn't sure which way they were going, because when there was a pause, I almost thought Survivor was going to do the other fake out where he just goes, can't wait for the challenge or something, you know what I mean, where like, you know, I thought like they were going to get us again, and like, you know, with Xander and Shan looking over. But yeah, it was so cool and so fun. When I mean, that was like so fun, like that's one of the best jolts I've had watching the show definitely all year, is just that fun of realizing, oh, they did find it. It's exciting, especially Nasir, who's so lovable, like the perfect person to be like, yes.
Let me say, because when I rewatched this, it was almost more exciting the second time. Like it's such like it just pumps you up. Just
and with the music coming in there at the end, right at the end of what he's saying, you can already hear the music coming in that they're going to go back, which is really fun.
And so we flash back to Nasir finding it. He talks about how his daughter makes him find idols on a daily basis, which is like, it still took you 9 days, but,
to be fair, it took him 9 days to find it in the backyard too.
Yeah, probably. it's such a fun moment, and he makes sure to say like, he's loving this game. It's hard work. But hard work pays off. And that's, again, I feel like that's such a key component of Nasir, like who he is. And it's why I think that you're right, that he is somebody that probably will stick to the tribe, right? And be loyal and be a hard worker. And like, I've got an idol and I'm going to use this to help, the tribe potentially. And I'm worried about that because of, again, the future advantage.
Yeah.
But we come back to the challenge. And I thought this was interesting, at least in terms of immediate foreshadowing. We get four reaction shots when we come back from the flashback after Nasir says his line. We get Nasir grinning, like, I said the line, I got an idol. We see Shan like kind of like, oh, yes. Oh, yeah, that's a great line that you just said. And Xander's like, oh, I finally got this thing. The fourth reaction shot is Lyanna looking annoyed, looking like, because she knows that all these got activated. But I thought it was interesting that they ended on a Lyanna reaction shot, considering the fact, of course, that she is going to be able to steal one of these idols. And I imagine she's going to. Worth noting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we get to the challenge. The challenge was fine. We see some slow-mo shots and Uwa is going to lose yet again. Yasa sends both Shan and Lyanna over to Advantage Island, Shipbuild Island, whatever they want to call it.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know more about how they arrived at that decision. I feel like we didn't get much about why that actually happened. It would be interesting to know.
That's the thing for me is that like we see so much about like finding an idol, why they found it, how they found it, how they obtained it, or even like were stealing it. But when it comes to these like super massive powers, like this is the biggest power in the entire game. It's one of the biggest powers they've ever introduced into the game. It's like being able to steal a star in Mario Party. Like, it's way better than just getting a star. So the fact that it just kind of like, boop, it's Lyanna. Like, but why?
Yeah.
Why they kind of explain like they wanted somebody who hadn't been there before. Which is like, okay. So they chose Shan but I have to imagine there was some kind of forethought with Lyanna because when she gets there, she's kind of like, hey, I've wanted to talk to you. Shan has wanted to talk to her. So like, I would love to have gotten a flashback about like Lyanna or even just ahead of time, just like Lyanna being like, hey, if we have a choice, I really think I would like to go. Like, wait, how did she plant those seeds? Did she plant those seeds? How did this happen? Because it's such a huge thing that she's going to end up getting this power. And especially if this relationship also is as important as it seems like it's going to be, I would again want to know like how this happened, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting going back to what you're saying. I wonder if, I mean, again, we don't know. This is all speculation. But I wonder if her decision to go was based on Xander's idol activating. You know, not that she knew that this was going to be the power, but she may have felt like, okay, you know, Xander now has something and maybe she pushed, maybe not aggressively, but pushed to be the one to go because she thought I gotta get something now, you know, I don't know. We don't know. It'll be interesting to know how much agency she really had in that decision.
I mean, it probably was just a matter of, again, like, you know, she was the only one that hadn't gone to a thing yet. But again, like, that's kind of why this is a lame way to obtain powers in the first place. Because when it's like, when it comes down to like who hasn't gone, you know, and like that's less fun even than somebody finding an idol, which was already not that fun. So we get to Advantage Island. Shan and Lyanna are going to bond. This is a really cool scene where they're not only bonding over the fact that, you know, they're both women of color, but they've sort of been like, okay, so this is how we need to work together. We don't want people to see us coming. They bond over the fact that Shan sort of opens up about her mom and her story, yeah. and we hear more about her story when she tells us in the confessionals. And based on what Jeannie has said in the exit interviews, this is part of how Shan is so good that she opens up. Because Jeannie said, like, I felt like Shan really trusted me and like wanted to work with me because she opened up about her past and it was like very emotional. And so like this is Shan at work, I guess. And it's not to say like not genuine, because I do think this was very genuine and Shan tells us it was genuine. But this is why people feel so good about Shan, because she is so good at just at being able to be open on a personal level while also making sure that her head is straight strategically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think it's kind of like what you just said. She's so good because it is genuine. You know, she's not this totally conniving villain where she's not like making up these kinds of stories. She's not, you know, using it in a really manipulative way. She is just connecting with people and finding things that she connect with people on and allowing herself to genuinely open up in that way. And so it's been really great. And whether or not, you know, getting to edit thing, but like whether or not they're giving her an edit because she's the winner, because she's a big character or whatever, she is one of the big people that we've gotten to know. And I do love, she feels so vital to the season no matter what happens. And it's been really fun to see the way that they're letting us get to know her kind of gradually. You know, they're not, they didn't give us everything about her right out of the gate. We're sort of learning a little more about her every episode, which I think is really cool from a storytelling perspective. I really like that. And I feel like every time we're, and that's the thing. She's been making these big moves and she's been getting advantages and she's been getting the extra vote, but they're taking the time to really let us get to know her as a person and slowly over time as well, which I think has just been so effective in her really popping as a character. And it's been really, really exciting to see. And whether or not it's she's going to take it all the way or she's going to be some kind of shocking blindside at some point, I love that they're taking the time to really make her someone that we're identifying.
Yeah, like I think edit-wise for me, the next episode is going to be like the key episode when it comes to Shan's edit, because she's been getting obviously this incredible edit that I think obviously she should have. I mean, she's such a fantastic character and she has been so vital in the destruction of her own tribe, essentially, right? But it, to me, these early edits, these pre-merge edits, they usually do have some early focuses that then lose steam at the merge. And like, because the pre-merge is sort of the telling of the destruction of Uwa, obviously Shan is the main character of that. But is Shan going to continue to be the main character once we hit the merge?
Yeah.
That to me is going to be a huge indication of where we're heading from here, because I do think there are some other options for people that could rise to prominence here once we hit the merge. And it's possible that Shan remains a big character, but maybe not quite as prominent or as important as before. Whereas, you know, in the Philippines, you know, Malcolm and Denise were like, they were still very present throughout once they hit the merge, because they do end up making it to the end. So that's what I'm going for.
Yeah. It's also like the other thing to think of, it's like Russell Hance in Samoa, you know, like that they were the decimate. They didn't go all the way to two, but they went from like 10 to four, you know, and it was like that was the thing where he was this huge character and getting all these confessionals and stuff like that. But then it was like, it seemed like an insurmountable thing. And then, once he got to the merge, it was the story of how he and the other people maneuvered their way. So we'll see if that's the story we're going to see with Shan or not.
Yeah. Shan offers the advantage to Liana. Now, obviously, there's reason to assume this is just an extra vote. They've done this twice before, and both times it's been an extra vote. Obviously, it becomes a lot more valuable than that. I mean, can you imagine if Shan had gotten this? And I do think there's a scenario where Shan could have gotten this by being like, hey, I'm in a 3-person tribe. I could really use the extra vote to help me survive. Would you mind giving it to me? But, and then, man, if she had ended up with that and had
I almost wish she would have known, because I feel like if they got there and Shan would have known this is what it was, she would have worked her magic. I guarantee you, she wouldn't have been able to resist, right? Like, she would have totally done that. And she would have been like, oh, Liana, you know, I this is so great that we bonded, and it's got to be me, you know, Ricard. I don't trust it. You know what I mean? Like, there's a million things she could have done, to obtain that, which I think would have been which would have been fun to watch. I think she would have definitely gone for it if she would have known it was this, for sure. The nice thing is she bonded with Liana and might be able to use it to her advantage anyway.
And here's the other reason why I think it, because I think that this is an, like, obviously lots of complaints about this advantage. I think there's an easy solve for all of it. And I think it's what you just said. I think if they knew what the advantage was, both of them, then first of all, Shan now has incentive to go for it. And because it's so valuable that it's like, okay, I want to try and get this. So now it's like, but obviously Liana would want it too. Now they both want it. Now it's an actual choice, an actual risk of like who's going to get it, where they have to decide. And because it's known what, because somebody knows what this is, that's not the person that has it, it's possible that this information could get leaked as well. And I think this advantage that we'll talk about very soon, works a lot better if other people know it exists. So I think that it's just a small thing to tell them both what it is. It solves a lot of potential issues.
Well, there's a really exciting scenario. It's funny, you just talking that made my mind go to this scenario where if you knew it was coming, then you could give your idol to another player before tribal. If you're like, okay, at tribal, you know, Liana is going to ask for my idol. And that would be, I think, an even more incredible moment than the one they're trying to go for, which is, you know, you can't lie. And they're like, I don't have an idol. And they're like, you had it this afternoon. I know you. And he's like, I don't have it anymore. What do you want me to say? Like, I don't have an idol. It'll be amazing. Exactly.
But you have to trust the person you gave your idol
to.
Right. Because then if they vote you out to keep the idol.
And then you get voted out anyway.
Imagine if Shan knows this exists and is like, okay, I'm going to give my idol to Ricard to hold on to. Yeah. Then, you know, it's obviously this doesn't seem like it would happen with Liana right now. But then Liana is like, hey, Shan, do you have an idol? And Shan's like, I actually don't. Failed, but then Ricard has orchestrated a blindside on Shan, and Shan gets voted out anyway, so he can keep the idol. Like, like lots of fun things that can happen here. I feel like if they know that this thing exists, it's called the knowledge is power advantage. And ironically, if other people knew about this power, it would be better.
And look, and on a normal season where you didn't have to go through all these hoops to get the idol, it's a little bit better because you think, well, you can only do this if you on your own or through another player's massive mistake of telling you or telling everybody. So then it would be different. You'd be able to track it more. You'd be able to go, okay, well, so-and-so messed up because, you know, they told the wrong person and all this different stuff, you know, but that's just not the case this year. It's like you said, it'd be interesting to know if in this moment, anybody doesn't know, like when you talked about at the challenge, like this, was there anyone at that challenge who didn't know what was going on? Eric, I mean, and Eric and Heather. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Who knows? Yeah. That's the thought.
So first of all, Liana says that her individual game is going to change when she hits the merge, sounding like she's willing to go off and work whatever she's going to work. She opens up the advantage that she gets, and it's called the knowledge is power advantage. This is what I read from the paper, right? You're allowed to ask one player either of the following two questions. Do you have an advantage? Or do you have an idol? The player cannot lie. I we saw Steven had a big issue with you can't lie. And I've seen other people with this issue as well.
Yeah.
I think this is just bad phrasing on their part, personally. Like the idea of not being able to lie about it, it's less about that and more about like, if I catch you with an idol, I get it. You know, whether you lie or not, it's kind of irrelevant. Like production will say like, you guessed correctly.
Right.
But if the answer is yes, the advantage or idol becomes yours. If the answer is no, you receive nothing and the advantage becomes powerless. If the player has more than one advantage or idol, it's up to them which one they give you, and they do not reveal they have more than one. You must share this information with them, it says. And it says that if there are any limitations to the advantage or idol, they must share that information with you. It says you can only ask one player one question one time. The question must be asked at tribal council before the votes are cast. The shot in the dark does not count as an advantage. And the last advantage can be used is when there are six players remaining in the game. So So it has to, the particular part here is can't be used on Shot in the Dark, has to be used at tribal, before the votes are cast. So you can't just go up to somebody at, you know, at camp.
The big question about this is, can you use this on someone as they're playing an idol? That's what I wonder. Cause now the way I hear that
is an idol after the votes are cast.
Oh, it's before the votes are cast. Sorry. I missed it. Okay. That makes more sense. Okay. Yes. That's how they got around that thing then. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So I will say again, I think to your point before, where this works a little bit better when you don't know where the idols are. So let's briefly talk about the balance of this, right? Because we've talked about how the Beware advantage, the three-way idol, it sucks. Like this is not an advantage, right? It prevents you from voting, which prevents you from using any other advantages. And you have to basically publicly announce the fact that you have this idol. There's basically no way to hide this because you're relying on two other people on two other tribes to keep this information a secret and not tell their allies, because if they tell their allies and their allies know, then other people now know the idol, they have no incentive to keep your secret a secret. So it's basically always going to get out, especially if something like the situation with Brad happens. Like there's almost no way this remains a secret for everyone, right? So you have to publicly obtain an idol after not being able to vote on a 6-person tribe. Which again, even worse than that, not being able to vote prevents you from using any other advantages that you might get. Incredibly bad thing to have happen to you.
Yeah.
But at the very least, maybe you're able to get an idol from it, even though everybody knows about it. And then they introduce an advantage where if people know about your idol,
yeah, exactly,
they can not only nullify it, but steal it from you, where you're now gifting your opponents your very hard-earned idol that you just spent 5 tribals of not being able to vote, not being able to use any advantages, having to make a fool of yourself at challenges.
You finally Brad did not feel like a broccoli tree for nothing, man. You didn't become the little broccoli tree for nothing.
And you have to just hand it to somebody else who just went to Advantage Island and got a thing handed to them no risk, no real risk at all. It's absurd, the balance of that. But even worse to me is that the balance for this power, the knowledge is power advantage, how the idol nullifier that we've seen before, the way that it functions was already pretty, you know, overpowered in some way. But the thing about it is that, like, you can't use it unless you know about, you know, where an idol stands. And, and the thing about that is that, because of how idols normally work, you pretty much only the people that, the only people that would know about where an idol is held, are the people that are close to the person who has the idol, right? So if you confide in somebody that you can't trust and then they have an idol nullifier, it's basically ensuring that when you use the idol nullifier, you're using it on an ally and you're blindsiding them. And, you know, somebody's getting betrayed here because they've told the wrong person. Not the case with this steal an advantage, because it's already public. You now know two people on two other tribes that have this thing. There's no social consequences to using it. If Liana wants to, she can say, you know, and here's where it's really bad. And I think it's particularly bad for Nasir, and it might not work out poorly for Nasir based on how the edit is playing out so far. Maybe it'll be fine, but it should work out poorly for Nasir based on trajectory of where we're heading. Luvu goes into a merge, whatever this is going to be, with 6 players. Uwa and Yasa go in with 4 and 2. Normally you'd probably end up with like a 6v6 kind of situation, maybe with a couple flip-floppers in between. Maybe a couple of people from Luvu have flipped because they've never gone to tribal and they're not super loyal to the tribe. And so, Luvu is in the minority now, and their only hope is for Nasir, who has this idol, to play it on the right person, and that's how they can, you know, somehow survive. But Liana has a steal an idol, and she gets to take it from Nasir at tribal, and now they have nothing to protect themselves. And of course, she's going to use it on him. She has no relationship to him prior to this. He's on the other side. There's going to be no social repercussions. There's no betrayal involved. She just knows because he said the phrase. It's bad on every level.
Well, he didn't make a mistake. That's the whole thing, right? Is that in this iteration of it, him getting his idol stolen from her was not because of a social mistake that he made to tell somebody, you know what I mean? Like a people on her tribe knew, they knew all three phrases. And, you know, it's just that whole thing where he won't have made a social error really in the way that you would want a player to see if they're going to get burned by this advantage, right? You'd want the outcome to be that Shan trusts Liam. I mean, you wouldn't because Shan's great, but you know, hypothetically, you know, you'd want it to be that Shan trusts Liana too much. And then Liana knows she has the idol and takes it from her. And you go, oh my God, Shan, what were you doing? You know, this is a totally different thing you're saying, right?
Exactly. And I'll say again, like, even if it does play out that like, maybe she steals Xander's, maybe she steals Shan's. And that would probably be, in terms of TV, the most exciting variation of how this plays out. Because Shan told Liana, but the fact that the most likely thing to have happen here, the path of least resistance is that Liana takes Nasir's idol. And that's always going to be the case. And that's just bad, you know, game balance. It's bad, setup. So many different reasons, entertainment value, balance, fairness, mm-hmm. all kinds of ways. This is a bad advantage, but it's great for Liana.
Yeah. Yeah. Great for Liana. That's awesome. Yeah. She was thrilled watching it. Her family.
She tells us she doesn't trust Xander and this advantage gives her everything she needs to snuff his torch. Again, implying that she's going to use this on Xander. I feel like that certainly could happen. But it really, there's not a lot of scenarios where that makes a ton of sense to me that she would do that. Why take one from a potential ally in mm-hmm. a merge situation who's on your tribe when you can take it from an enemy and have your own, right?
I guess the only thing is maybe they're not merging and maybe she's going to wind up on some kind of tribe with him where, you know, she doesn't want to. I mean, you know, we'll have to see, I guess, maybe that's why it happens, you know, right? Because in a merge situation, you can't imagine that it would make any sense until maybe 7 or 6 if they somehow can maneuver their way through. But yeah, maybe this weird, you know, almost merge thing that Jeff is teasing, maybe she'll be in a situation where maybe they'll both be in the minority or something like that. And,
yeah, I mean, that's
they're splitting the vote on them, and so Xander's going to survive, and she isn't, and so she steals his idol.
That would be a good scenario for sure. Again, like, but you know, in terms of like planning, you know, you're hoping for a niche thing to play out, but
yeah, of course. Yeah.
Stealing it from him so that she survives instead of him would be fun. Also, like, basically, if he flips on her or Yasa at any point in the next episode, he's screwed. She's definitely going to take it from him.
Yeah.
It's basically a, you better not flip on me. But she can't tell him that she'll take it because then he'll be able to give it away if he wants to.
Yeah.
So either way, that's the advantage stuff. We go back to Uwa and, this is actually relatively straightforward, even though we get some interesting stuff from it. Ricard needs to convince Jeannie to not use her shot in the dark. Again, this is why I'm loving the shot in the dark stuff. I mean, normally on a 3-person tribe, it's you'd probably just end up, as long as you know she doesn't have an idol, you just go,
someone could have told her, you know what I mean? They were different players, you know?
Mm-hmm. But because there's the shot in the dark exists, you need to convince her basically that the chances of you voting with her are greater than 1 in 6. And so she should try to vote with you rather than use the shot in the dark. So that's what Ricard is trying to do here, but she does not trust him. She says she's actually voting him out with Shan. And this is confirmed again by her in the exit interview. She says she was never writing Shan's name down. And this was the first time that Shan's name was even brought up as a facade. Yeah. The final three.
right. Because there was no one else to use as the fake plan. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, there's no world where like, you can't pretend they're voting somebody else if they're not voting the person they're talking to.
So Shan comes back, tells them about the trip, and she wants to pitch to them. They want to pitch to her. So she says to us that she needs to make sure that they're both still with her. So she says she trusts and believes Jeannie, but she wants insurance that Ricard won't blindside her. So this probably requires a little bit of explanation, because my first thought was, how could he? If Shan and Jeannie vote together, then the best that Rickard could do with an extra vote is tie it up, where again, I would assume that the tiebreaker rules go against Rickard in that spot. But it actually does make a little bit of sense here, because that's not what Shan intends to do, right? Shan intends to vote Jeannie out. Jeannie votes Rickard out. So Rickard, with the extra vote, could place two votes on Shan to make it a 2-1-1 vote to take out Shan. So there is a theoretical world where it's possible that Rickard does this, and that's what Shan's worried about. And notably, she said to Liana on Advantage Island, hey, if I get voted out, Rickard is not to be trusted. aware of the fact that Rickard is a player, somebody capable of doing this, whereas she doesn't think clearly that Jeannie is really that capable of doing it or going to do it. So I can see why she might have thought that it's possible that, you know, it's possible that Rickard could do this to her. So she wants the extra vote back to prevent that possibility from existing, which makes sense on one level. My issue with this from Shan's point of view is that I don't think she's looking at it necessarily from Ricard's point of view. When I was trying to think about Rickard, and, you know, if it's like, because they always love to fake us out, and whenever they try to fake us out at the vote, I try to think about the players and what their actual incentives are. I couldn't find a single incentive for Rickard to vote Shan out here, especially if he has to burn his extra vote. Do it. It just doesn't make any sense that he would go to work with Jeannie, who is not willing to work with him on this vote, wants to vote him out over Shan, has never wanted to work with him, tried to vote him out in the first tribal council. He'd have to burn his extra vote in order to make it happen, and now go into a merge with Jeannie, who doesn't trust him, and no extra vote,
and no idol.
Voted out the person with the idol. And Jeannie is not a bigger threat than him. She's a loyal, not a huge threat kind of player. Like, it makes no sense on every single level. There's no way that he would ever want to do this. It just, as a player who, you know, they talk about how he is strategic. He seems to be a very strategic player. A player like that, I do think you can kind of reliably, predict in terms of, is it in his self-interest? No, on like every level. So I don't think she needs to ask for that advantage back and make this awkward in the way that it's made awkward.
Yeah, no. And I mean, again, he wouldn't do this, but it's almost that fearful thing where like one of the only ways he might is if she does ask and he gets freaked out and he goes, wait a second, what's happening here? You know, are you coming for me? You know? So yeah, that's like, it's almost like if she says nothing, she's definitely not going to get burned by it by asking it. And you got to give Rickard credit for sticking to his guns. And, you know, as I was watching the episode, I was really thinking about that. And I was like, is he approaching this the right way? And I ultimately think he did, because you wind up in this situation where he's taking a risk either way, right? If he gives it back to her, he's risking that she's going to burn him. And if he keeps it, he's risking that, you know, she's going to get mad and vote him off. I mean, he had to take this risk and keep the insurance, because he knows she put in all that work. She's not going to lose the extra vote just because she's annoyed, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think he played this about as well as he could have, given the circumstances. Because when I talk about there's no incentive for Rickard to vote Shan out, the reverse is not really true. There's a lot of incentive for Shan to vote Rickard out over Jeannie. Again, Jeannie wants to work with Shan, feels very good with Shan, would be a loyal number for Shan moving forward, would not be somebody that would betray Shan at the final seven or six, you know, in anticipation for a final tribal, and is still somebody that Shan could probably beat in a final tribal. I think that Rickard is probably easier to beat, given his social game on Ua. But, you know, Jeannie is in many ways a very valuable ally, somebody that could be very valuable for her moving forward, and sort of and could really help her maintain a more palatable image heading into a merge, where like if it's her and Rickard, they're both seen as strategists who made it to the end of their tribe. Whereas if it's her and Jeannie, it's like, hey, we had a bond and we survived this tough time. There's a lot of incentive for her to do that, especially if she gets the extra vote back. She's not losing anything. So from Rickard's perspective, when Shan asks him for the extra vote back, I think he's completely right. He says,
You have no reason to keep me.
You have no reason to keep me. Yeah. You have no reason to keep me.
Yeah.
If you take this.
No, he just saw what happened to JD.
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting with what you brought up too is she had said to Liana, if I'm not here, Ricard burn me because we're tight. So if she shows up to the merge having burned Ricard, that would actually potentially look bad potentially on her. So that was another she sort of locked in there, didn't she, in terms of like if she said, oh, Jeannie and I had a bond, like Liana might not have even bought that. She might have been like, I thought it was Ricard. Like,
yeah. I mean, she wouldn't have been able to work that narrative. I think that she could have said like Ricard turned on me.
Totally. She could have. Right. And the only pro, because like all the things you listed about keeping Jeannie are so valid. And the only thing I can think of on the other flip side is the one thing I do like about Chan's position moving into the merge with Ricard is he will probably be seen as the more shifty player. We've just heard it over and over and over again. So I think there's a very good opportunity that when and if he says, all right, now's my moment, I'm taking out Chan, people will probably be like, oh, here's Ricard, he's a gamer, you know, especially if he's going to people like Liana and Evie and whatever combination they're at that point. So in a weird way, I feel like Ricard has shown that even though he might come up with the idea, is he going to be able to outmaneuver her socially? It doesn't seem like that's the case.
Yeah. And so from Ricard's perspective, there's really no reason for Chan to ask for his extra vote for the extra vote, unless she planned to vote him out.
Right.
So
yes.
There's really a lot of incentive for him to hold on to it because either she's going to vote him out, whether or not he gives up the extra vote and he'd rather take it out with him.
Or
doesn't have any intention of voting him out, and she's probably not going to change that based on the fact that he has an extra vote, because she would have to, out of spite, like he doesn't trust me enough to give me this extra vote, not only change her original plans and vote him out, but also be willing to burn that extra vote and get rid of it by voting him out if he keeps it. So and again, like it's not like she can turn on him in a merge situation, like. They're gonna have to work together. They have nobody else. And it's also probably not like he's gonna be relying on her ultimate loyalty in the finals, because he probably knows he's gonna lose next to her. If he gets to the end, he knows he's gonna have to turn on her eventually anyway. So for lots of reasons, I think it makes sense. But what a fun conversation to have in an episode. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this. I really liked, Because Chan knows how untenable her position is, right? Like, she knows that she literally just did this to JD. But I promise this time, even though we just did this to JD, this time it's not against you.
It sounds like you're trying to get it so you can blindside me.
No, I'm not. I just want... Okay, I want what I did the legwork for with JD. That's what I want.
And like, you can see, like, she's about to say, I want what I like deserve, what I earn. She's like, but then she's like, oh, but I stole it. I want what I did the legwork for.
Yeah, exactly. And that's another reason why he should have known. If she did all that legwork, she's not just going to throw it away for spite, you know? And he is in a position where he kind of has to give it back to her in the next episode. Like, he kind of does. Like, so she knows. I mean, if they come back to camp and he's like, actually, like, then that's a terrible move. It's unfortunate for him, but he played it the way he needed to, which was holding it as insurance. And now he's going to probably just have to give it back.
And another interesting thing that comes from this whole episode is that we're hearing a lot more about, like, Ricard selling himself as the strategist, as the person that sort of directed the action, and Chan is the closer, the person that executes it. And that comes out a little bit here as well.
I feel like this is a weird conversation because this is literally what I told you to tell JD.
And this is not something that she contradicts. In this moment, when they talk in Tribal about how he is the strategist and she is the closer, and in Jeannie's exit interviews as well, she also seems to reinforce this idea that she saw Ricard as the person coming up with the ideas and Chan as the one executing the ideas. Now, we just got through Big Brother 23, where players in the game had a very misguided perception of who actually was doing what. I don't think you can always take players at their word for who did it. Even the players, because sometimes, you know, players sort of, even the players that did it themselves are convinced by other players that, like, oh, somebody else must have done some other stuff. So who knows how much of this is the reality? It's not really what we saw in the episodes. But at the very least, it wouldn't surprise me if Ricard was a lot more involved in sort of like coming up with these ideas. It is certainly portrayed as him coming up with the idea to tell Jeannie about the fake, thing, saying the phrase, even though they didn't have it. He also seems to be the one to come up with the idea of putting a fake idol in the package. So him being somebody that comes up with a lot of ideas, probably not out of the realm of a possibility at all. However, we are all also seeing that socially, he does not have a lot of social capital to pull these things off. And I do think that these are great. Like, if this is the case, this is a great relationship to have. This is a great pairing. We've seen stuff like this be very successful before. Steven said last night, you know, he was in one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Who is like a super strategic person, but doesn't have that social capital to pull off the moves that they want to do. Being able to kind of direct a person that does have that social capital, but otherwise wouldn't have that strategic mind. They can really be very effective together. But if they're apart, not so much. If they get split up, or if they break up, betray each other, it'd be very interesting to see how that unfolds. Again, assuming that is the dynamic in any way.
And it feels like a dangerous combination for them going into a merge or even any kind of swap. I mean, even in a swap, like, they're still not going to be big targets this late in the, you know, with this few people, they're on the cusp of merge. So that's a dangerous combo that they can work those two angles to sort of put the two larger tribes against one another. So, and maybe that's what Shan's thinking, you know, is that it's early in the game, and as loyal as Jeannie's going to be, she wants to enter into the situation where, even though we've seen it work out often for Malcolm and Denise, for like Folafoa and stuff, you'd think looking at it that they're in real trouble, right? So she may feel like she wants to go into the merge with the strategic big gun that is Ricard, so that they can pull off exactly what they need to do to get the numbers.
Yeah. So she tells us that it was a bad moment for them, that it was a tough moment, and she could easily vote his behind out. So the question is, does she bring the strategist or the loyalist? She's definitely very good at giving these sort of like recaps of like, this is the decision, this or this. And she's been doing that for the last like three episodes. As we get to tribal, and again, this is when Ricard calls himself the strategist and Shan is the closer. Jeannie says that Shan is in the power position. She says in the exit interviews that she did think that the odds were higher that Shan would vote with her than the 16.6% chance of the shot in the dark working out. She felt really good about Shan, but obviously that is not the case. They vote Jeannie out. No advantages are played, and that's it for Jeannie.
Yeah. No. And as we said earlier, you know, it's tough. We know that. Jeannie wasn't with Shan, and that's on Jeannie. That Shan wasn't with Jeannie, and that's on Jeannie as a player to not know that. But, you know, I can understand if she really believes Shan is with her, why would she waste the shot in the dark when she's about to enter into a situation where she could be the boot at the merge? I mean, there's so many other scenarios where you can envision needing it and needing it. And that's the hard thing about, you know, it's exactly the same as playing an idol, right? It's like, you don't want to play it when you don't need it and then not have it, you know, later. And you have to weigh that risk and reward in your own mind. You know, every player has to make that decision sort of on their own. And like I said, if this whole time Shan had been tight with Jeannie and she'd been playing Ricard, we'd be looking at him and going, what a fool. You know, he had the two votes right there. She didn't have the right read.
This is again a scenario where I would love to know exactly how the tiebreaker works. I have an assumption of how it would work, but if Jeannie rolls the shot in the dark, loses her vote, let's say Shan was on board with Jeannie, and so Shan votes Ricard, thinking that Jeannie is going to vote Ricard too. Ricard votes Jeannie, thinking that Shan is with him voting out Jeannie. Jeannie then loses her vote with the shot in the dark, but doesn't become immune, or even if she did, right? It should theoretically be a tie between Jeannie and Ricard. Jeannie would not be able to vote on the revote. Ricard would also not be able to vote on the revote, meaning Shan would then be the only vote on the revote where Shan could then continue to vote out Ricard. And so I feel like unless you think that Shan is going to, in a similar spot of like Ricard not giving the extra vote back, because you rolled your shot in the dark, now Shan is going to change her vote and vote out Ricard, or vote out you over Ricard because you rolled your shot in the dark. You should actually just roll your shot in the dark anyway, yeah. I think. Because, like, would Shan really do that? Because now if Shan does that, she's voting you out and keeping Ricard after just having voted Ricard. Yeah. Ricard's going to know that she was against her in the first vote. There's not a lot of incentive for her to switch her vote just because you rolled your shot in the dark. I don't think there's a lot of reason to be like, hey, you really screwed me over, especially if it's a given that Shan is that revote anyway. So again, without knowing exactly how those tiebreakers work, I feel like if you're Jeannie, you just roll your shot in the dark regardless.
Yeah, but I think that was the whole thing of that speech that Shan gave is even though you're right, when you look at it, you know, clearly it does not make sense. But I think Shan really was trying to hit that home. And who knows if she said something to the same effect back at camp where she was like, you know, if you use the shot in the dark, you're really burning me. Like, you're really showing me that we can't work together. And it seemed like that's the angle she was playing. And I guess she was kind of able to make it work, even though, yeah, if you really look at it, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't seem to be the smart play.
And that's the perspective that Ricard sees through, right? Because it's what JD falls for. It's what Brad falls for. It's what Jeannie falls for. They think that they have to abide by Shan's, what Shan says, right? Like Shan says, if you don't do this, how am I going to trust you? If you don't give me that extra vote, how am I going to trust you? Ricard understands that that's a veil, that Shan is going to do what strategically makes sense for Shan, regardless of how she feels. I think because she presents herself as a very feeling person, people are expecting her. And, you know, the way that JD described Shan is that he saw her as somebody that was very paranoid and that would consistently go off about like worrying about things and that he had to calm her down. Ricard understands that he can do something that goes against what Shan wants and still survive Shan because it makes strategic sense for Shan to keep him. Whereas Jeannie feels like, I don't want to do something that would indicate to Shan that I don't trust her. It doesn't matter to Shan whether you trust her or not. It matters to Shan what makes the most sense for her in this moment, right? So
yeah.
a very interesting, I think, way of looking at Ricard versus Jeannie there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if Jeannie was the kind of player that could have come to Shan with a strategic pitch to take out Ricard, I don't know exactly what the pitch is on the top of my head, but if Jeannie had actually come to her with a really clear plan of here's why you don't want Ricard, here's why, you know, I'm this and this and this, if she'd felt more urgency and more danger, maybe she would have had some kind of shot. And she just didn't really seem to make those arguments based on what we saw on the show. She didn't seem to really push Shan strategically because she's not.
So that's the episode. We got through a lot of the exit interview stuff. There was a secret scene. It was not super strategically relevant. They were doing a drum circle.
Yes.
And Evie says they feel like the tribe really gets along. Tiffany also says the vibe is really good. They vibe really well on the tribe, which seems to be a sort of counter to what they're portraying. Yasa on the episodes appears to be a very combative tribe where like it's very divided. Tiffany and Liana hate Xander. They may get along a little bit more than is being portrayed in the episodes based on the secret scene, but who knows?
The question is, how much do you factor Tiffany's drumming skills into today's stock watch? Does she get a point? Does she lose a point? She almost hit people? Who knows?
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, let's get into the Stockwatch here. Let's rate these players. there are only 12 players now in the game, mm-hmm. But we will be rating 13 because we will still rate Genie. So let's. I'll pull up the cast here. Here they are. If you are watching along in the video, and yep. We will start with Uwa again as they went to Tribal Council. And at the bottom of Uwa, of course, we have Genie. That's where I placed her. I think I was too generous with JD last week. I think I gave him the benefit of the doubt based on those X interviews, which I now believe. Yeah. A little bit exaggerated. I think JD probably should have hit that one. But Genie, I did give a two here. I mean, I don't feel like, you know, I don't think she's like a terrible player by any means, but obviously in terms of this episode, telling Shan and Ricard about the idol, trusting Shan, when she shouldn't have, you know, basically did, a lot of things wrong here. Now, you know, it's a three person tribe. Like, there's nowhere to hide. I'm not like overly faulting her here, but in terms of the decision points that she did have, she made the wrong decisions, and that's where she is.
Yeah, it's hard because you're asking her to do things that she wouldn't normally do. She's not that kind of player. However, I feel like I would give her a one because she had options this week, right? If it's a different thing where, because as we talked about, you can look back and you can say mistakes by Brad and JD put her in this situation where she was in a tribe of three and she had nowhere to hide. But she did find the beware advantage, and she could have taken that shot. She did have the ability to pitch Shan harder. She had the ability to pitch Ricard harder in that way too. She had the ability to do the shot in the dark. And again, even though we have so much sympathy for her for where she felt, her read was totally wrong, and she missed all the possible outcomes. So that's unfortunately, I just feel like it was a week where I was like, they were right there. If she had had a better read, she had multiple avenues that she could have played, and it just feels like she let them all go by. You know, so it's tough. Even though she's a good player, and in different circumstances, you know, she could have gone further. But it feels like this week that she did have somewhere to hide, and she did have avenues, and she just didn't take them.
I do think that's fair. I mean, you know, there was definitely an out here. If she takes that beware advantage, it activates. She has an idol. She almost definitely doesn't go home here. She survives until the merge. Like, that's definitely a rough pill to swallow. But I think even more so than JD last week, who I do think, and maybe I'll look back at this week again and be more like, I was too generous. But I think on a three-person tribe, there's so... it put her in a situation where she was forced. It was like a forced error rather than an unforced error. It felt like. So, all right. Above Genie, this is a pretty simple tribe at this point. Only three people left. Yeah. One of them's voted out. We have Ricard. Now, last week I gave Ricard a six. I felt like he was going to survive the tribe. But I was worried because he seemed to rub people the wrong way. And I, even though I like what he did here, I feel like we've heard more about his strategic acumen. He seems to be getting a little more credit there. His inability to have any social capital, continues to concern me. I almost gave him a seven this week. I almost went up. But for me, it's the fact that he still couldn't get Genie to even budge. On her position of sticking with Shan. He had her all to himself while Shan was away and couldn't even make a dent in Genie. And you can be the greatest strategist in the world. If you are not able to make those social relationships, it's really going to be difficult for you. And so for that reason, I gave him a six again. Now, I do think that he has like seven or more potential. I think that he's clearly, I'm more impressed by him overall in this episode than I have been in the past. So if he hits that merge and he makes bonds with people other than Shan, I will be very much looking, for, you know, what he's capable of at that point. But I think I'm at the point where I'm really just looking at it and I'm like, I don't think he can. I haven't seen him bond with a single person other than Shan. And even right. Shan doesn't like him that much. Even before he wasn't willing to give the vote back, Shan was already jumping ship to Liana over him. Like, he has no social bonds. You need those social bonds. They are your bread and butter in this game. You can be, again, you can be the smartest guy in the world, but it will not matter a bit if you have no people to back it up. And that seems to be the position Ricard is in here. So for now, I'm still at a 6, but I do think he has the potential if I can see, maybe he was just in with a bad batch of people for him in particular. Maybe there are people he will be able to bond with moving forward, but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I would be willing to go a little higher and go for the 7 because I do think he deserves credit for making it through a tribe of 6. And again, that's actually a good point about the Liana thing, which was not something I was thinking about that Shan was already kind of selling him out. But I do think the one thing you have to give Ricard credit for, and I'm only at a 7 because I agree with a lot of what you said, but the one thing I will give him a credit for is that he made the most important bond. And now how much of that was by design, how much of that was luck, but he was the one, right? He made the most important social connection, and whether it's strategic or social. So I'm interested to see what he can do given a new group of people. Can he find the correct person again to either convince strategically or not to survive? You know, the way that he interacts could rub some people the wrong way, or it could, you know, be exciting to some people. They might go, oh, okay, this guy, you know. And again, I am not high in his chances for the win. It feels like he is going to be seen as way too big a player at a certain point. But based on how he navigated this tribe and based on the position he's in, I think that coming into, as much as he'll look like a threat, he's coming into this situation weakened. He's one of two people. And he'd have to play pretty poorly in the next few weeks to go home. I think he'd have to be really aggressive and really sketchy. And the fact that he survived this long in the tribe with Shan makes me think that he has some sense of how to not do that. Because I think if he was a truly messy strategic player, I think he would have been voted out at a certain point. Again, I don't see him pulling out the win. As I said, I think Shan is in a great spot with him because he'll probably go before her, but I'm willing to go 7 because I think he's a good player. I think he's navigated this tribe, and I'm willing to see that I think he's going to make it through the next few weeks. I really do. And then we'll see where he's at.
It's very fair. All right. Let's talk about Shan. I'm going to have you start with Shan. Yeah. Obviously top of the tribe.
Totally.
But what's the rating here?
Top of the tribe, maybe top of the game. I mean, at this point, which is interesting. I'm going to go 9. I think you got to go 9 with everything. The only reason I'm holding back from a 10 is just that she is going into a situation where she's down in the numbers. Now she's got an idol and an extra vote, but the positioning isn't quite there 100% for me to go, okay, 10 of 10. There's a million scenarios you can imagine where she kind of winds up on the ropes or has to burn one of these things. But there's really not much bad to say. She survived the tribe. Every exit interview that comes out, it becomes incredibly clear that she was the closest to everyone, that she was essentially running the tribe. This has traditionally been a good spot. Traditionally, going down the intentional messing, you know, it's that way for a reason. It's traditionally been really good to come into these things. You even look at Koh Rong, you know, when the beauty tribe was sort of the tribe, I believe, that had the most numbers or close to it. I can't remember who had the most. Maybe it was, I can't remember. I think so. That was a lot more divided, but they felt like that going into these things. And so you want to be the sort of lesser people, the lower people. And so she's in a great spot. And really what puts her over the edge is this Liana connection, because you're already starting to see the path to get out of it. You're already seeing the narrative that is similar to Malcolm and Denise, to these people where she's going to have an in and she's going to combine with somebody else. And so, yeah, it's a 9 for me. Again, in the same way I said about Ricard, I don't know if she's going all the way yet because there's a lot of game to play, but I think she's good for a while. I cannot see in a scenario where she goes home in the next few weeks at all. And the more likely scenario is that she winds up in a very, very good spot.
Yeah. So for me, I gave her a 9 last week and I was thinking about it and I was thinking like, I'll go with a 10, I think. But then I was like, but I didn't love, you know, the asking for the advantage back, not getting it. I felt like that was a bit of a mistake, a bit of an error. So can I go a 10? But then I thought, you know what? Yes, I can go a 10. So I went with a 10 for Shan.
All right.
The reason I went with a 10 here is that, like, was it a perfect episode for her? I do think, again, you know, the Ricard situation was a bit of an error. And obviously now heading into a potential merge situation, things are fraught with, it's fraught with danger. Yeah. However, I think when you look at all of the accomplishments in this episode alone, she is fresh off of stealing an extra vote. She gets an extra vote. She then steals an idol, which activates, and she now has an idol. She also then goes to Advantage Island, makes an incredible connection with Liana, who is going to very quickly become in a power position on in a merge situation where she's going to be able to steal an idol, and helps get Liana that power, and bonds with Liana. That connection is so huge, especially when, again, looking at a merge situation, you're probably looking at Uwa and Yasa teaming up. And so the fact that Shan has that connection to help help make that happen, which would guarantee six players out of 12 with the majority of the advantages. Pretty good spot. massive, massive stuff there. And then she gets back to the tribe back to camp where she wasn't able to be there for most of the day. She gets back and she still has her complete option of who she wants to send out. Yeah. Genia is not willing to budge. And then in a three-person tribal council with multiple different shot in the dark, idol, extra vote situation, doesn't have to use a single thing, and is able to take out the final person on the tribe before the merge. I mean, just so many accomplishments in this episode alone. I feel like it goes all the way up to 11 and then brings it back down to a 10. I couldn't ask for much more, I think, in this one episode for Shan. So for me, Shan is a 10 here. I'm very curious to see where this goes with this, you know, not exactly a merge.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fascinating to see with you putting her to 10 the rest of the season as you do the podcast, because there's a scenario where she might stay there for a long time. Because if next week comes around and all this stuff we're talking about comes to fruition, you see her putting that block together, or whoever goes out kind of is a perfect situation. Or if somehow she goes to another tribal and what gets what she wants from this weekend position, you can't go down, you know? So it could be a really amazing run here. Deserved, you know?
There's a little bit of like an episode to episode, like what has she done for me lately, right? If she's just kind of coasting on what she's done before, I could go to like a 9 or something.
I guess so, you could, yeah.
Just because again, like it's sort of like a combination of like long-term prospects plus like what you did in the episode plus, you know, short-term safety.
Next week is really a fascinating week for her, because she's no doubt been playing an amazing game to this point, and it feels like it's going to continue, but it'll be fun to actually see it play out.
Mm-hmm. So there we go. 10 for Shan from me. Let's head over to the Yasa tribe. I do have a bit of a shakeup here in these ratings, for myself at least, because I now have Xander at the bottom of the Yasa tribe, where prior to this, and it's interesting because I thought he'd be going up as time went on, because the longer or the closer he came to emerge, the closer he was to getting his vote back, to being out of danger, to being able to potentially flip, to all this kind of stuff.
He got the idol.
Yeah, and I mean he got an idol. He can vote again, and he's gonna hit emerge where his allies have no incentive to turn on him. He's heading into a better position than he was before, but I'm still further down on him because he screwed up. And one of the reasons why I was higher on him before is that once he gets out from under that huge rock he was under of that beware advantage, I thought he seems like a capable player. He'll be able to use the things that he gets in a smart way. I'm not so sure of that anymore. He speaks well for himself. He talks a good game, but he has not been able to really perform a great game so far. And, this was not a good indication of his ability as a player. And when it comes to like his actions this week, it was not great. So I've gone down to a 4 for Xander. Now, I think, again, this is a situation where it could definitely go up once he hits emerge and things change and he's in a better position. But this was definitely not a even though it was in a lot of ways a great episode, it was also not a great episode in a lot of ways for Xander, especially with, and again, I'm not factoring this into the rating, but the edit does again seem to be pointing to the fact that Anna will use this, steal an idol on Xander.
Yeah, I think a four is pretty much just right. And it's not even just the edit, right? Like she said it, like, it's like she said it as this point of vocalizing it that way. And so it's hard to be excited that he got an idol. And again, it's the same thing of people are going to know that he has it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and the other thing for Xander is, and we'll talk about maybe some of the other people in this tribe and how it's the opposite, but for Xander, he's now entering the portion of the game where being a physical threat is a bad thing too. So he's entering a part of the game. He's not entering a part of the game where he's the idol is going to be the thing. He already would be someone that people would be looking at as, hey, you know, this is the next Ozzy Joe type guy, long haired athletic dude. We should get rid of him. I mean, it's a cliche, but he has the look. And so the fact that he has an idol, the fact that he has other things, the fact that he hasn't proven to be able to totally strategically block those things. We have not seen him be able to be in a tribe and lessen his threat level. I don't love his prospects really. And the only thing he has going for him is the potential that he's not the only way he's going to be in a good spot is in the short term is if they go after the big tribe that hasn't lost any members, you know, that's the only way that he can kind of survive. And even then I, you know, he's bottom of this tribe. And if it would be different if it wasn't this knowledge is power thing. And if the person with it hadn't vocalized that she wants to take it from him. I mean, it's just hard to get excited about that idol.
Yeah. So next up on the tribe, and this was actually closer than I thought it would be, but I do then have Tiffany up next. I actually moved Tiffany up to a six. I mean, I feel like Tiffany has been slowly climbing this ladder here for me over the last few episodes. The fact that Xander trusts her more than Liana, big positive. She also seems to have Liana more than Evie does all of a sudden, big positive. Now, I think there are still some potential negatives. The fact that, again, she seemed to rub Sydney the wrong way and with a potential merge incoming, that could not be great. She also, she even if she does have Liana more than Evie does at this time, I think Shan now probably has Liana more than she does. Mm-hmm. So not the greatest spot there. Plus, I still, remember, you know, the paranoia about the butterfly. All of that stuff still hasn't completely left my head, but I still went with a six here for Tiffany.
Yeah, it's a six. I think I might lean a little bit more on a five just when I'm looking at the fact that paranoia could return. And look, the opposite of what I just said about Xander, she's in a great spot now where even though she's proven to be great at challenges, I mean, they have not lost in a long time. People will still remember that one challenge where she sort of struggled. And I think if she's smart about it, she'll be able to play up. Why would you get rid of me? I'm not this big immunity threat. So you got to think she's in a great spot where she's made it to the portion of the game, like a Sandra or something like that, where she's now not going to be on the top of the hit list. But some of that paranoia, I don't know. And some of the way she's rubbed people the wrong way. She's in a spot now to go far. But when you look at the other people in her tribe, Evie, Liana, Shan, Ricard, these other players in the game, I just don't know if we've seen from her that she's going to have the ability to improve upon her position. Yeah, I just don't know if between the paranoia and between some of these other things, I think it's going to be a blast to watch her. And I think we've seen that she's a better player than maybe people thought those first couple of weeks. She's leveled out in a great way. I still am not so sure I see Tiffany being able to pull off the big moves that she'd need long term. And I don't think she's necessarily even positioned in the tribe to do it. It's still going to come down to Liana or maybe even Evie. So I got to go five here. But there's potential here for a deeper run than originally thought, I think.
Yeah. Well, for me, just above Tiffany, I had Evie, who has been in second place on this tribe for a little while for me.
Yeah.
However, I've had them at around a seven. I'm docking them down to a six here. They seem to have lost positioning on their tribe. It's, at least, again, it seems that way. The fact that Tiffany is suspicious of Evie, not great. The fact that Liana seemed to be on board with Tiffany, not great. The fact that Liana, even if she's not on board with Tiffany, is now very on board with Shan, potentially not great. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't still some potential positives. Evie did make a connection to Deshaun. which could be valuable in a merge situation. And Evie does have Xander, but I'm concerned because of that connection to Deshaun and the information that Evie dumped about Xander. That could be damaging in a situation where Deshaun is not on the same side as Evie. So overall, it looks like Evie, who started in a very strong position, has it's been slowly sort of slipping from their grasp. And I'm very, very curious to see how Evie handles a merge situation. So for me, Evie down to a six.
I think I'm still a little higher on them. I think I would still go a seven because I think I feel similarly about them as I do about Ricard, in that there just seems to be a lot of raw skill there. And they're just so even though I don't love what's happening within the tribe, it's going to be a new game. And I think we saw how much they flourished in the early part of the season. So I just have faith in the fact that if something happens and Xander is gone or the whole thing gets thrown, I would put more faith in Evie than a lot of other players still left in the cast to rebound and to potentially even identify what a threat Chan is, you know, or what a threat some of these other people are. So I'm willing now to keep them at a seven because I feel good about the potential with the new reset coming up next week, whatever it is. But yeah, if next week and in the future, it feels like they're continuing on this trend of things slipping, it could go much further down if I were to continue ranking week by week, because it feels tenuous, but I'm betting on the previous performance. And I'm betting on the fact that I don't see a lot of scenarios where they're going to go home. Like, you know, so they'll have a chance to rebound. And I think they'll have an ability to do it. And they've shown that they could.
Yeah. Okay. So then, of course, I've got Liana at the top of the tribe. And I've moved Liana up from the seven last week to an eight this week. And I considered going higher considering how big this connection to Shan is. We've seen how well that's worked for Ricard. Yeah. Plus the hugely overpowered advantage that's in her hands. However, in the same episode, we also heard from Xander that he doesn't trust Liana as much as Tiffany, which is not a great sign there. And I'm not entirely sure where her head is at. Again, when she talks about stealing from Xander rather from somebody on a different tribe, maybe she's just not anticipating a merge coming up. But, you know, again, if she's looking at potentially stealing from Xander, even if they do get to a merge, I don't love that strategic thinking, but I don't want to dock her too much for something that she hasn't done yet.
Yeah.
But I think an eight is around where I would put her here.
I agree. I think that's right. I mean, personally, based on what I've done, putting Shan at the nine, I wouldn't put her on the same level as whatever I put Shan at. But I do think she's a little bit higher than the people I've given a seven to, because she has this advantage. She has this connection with Shan. And she's in a good spot. You know, I think she seems to be a really smart player. She seems to have the ability, kind of like what Jeannie was talking about in the exit interview with Rob this morning about she played with fear. She played with fear at the end and she regretted that. I don't think we're going to see that with Liana. I think she's here to play a big game. I think she's here to make big moves. And so I think she'll go out, hopefully, unless she gets missed by Shan or something, which could totally happen. I think that we're going to see her, go out strong and keep fighting till the end. So I think that it'll be interesting to see what happens here with her. But I like her positioning going into the going into this next phase of the game, especially with that advantage.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about Luvu, who, again, we saw very little from.
Yeah.
Probably not a ton to talk about here, but I did put Erica at the bottom of Luvu, same as last time. I went with a three last week because that was the week of her big mistake. This week, I'll just give her a four. Just seems still like at the bottom of potential target.
Yeah.
But not a lot of updated information.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to think. It's hard to say because I'm trying to think about like if her situation improves or worsens based on the new circumstances. Because four feels about right. And I'm like, am I a little lower on her than that? Or am I feeling like I think I'll go with a three because I think that she is in a situation where if if Deshaun is already worrying about them being a big tribe, if it was a straight merge, I'd feel differently. But this possibility that they could wind up on some weird configuration, I could actually see a scenario where Deshaun and Danny having some kind of majority vote her out over a Shan or over somebody else because they don't trust her and they're trying to lessen their threat level and see it as their last opportunity to do it. So that's the only thing is I think there's still an opportunity where she gets clipped by her own tribe.
I think that's a really good call, actually. So let's just briefly talk about this. So in the preview, Jeff says, drop your buffs. Yeah. It's time for the merge. Exactly, he says.
Yes. Shades of drop your expectations. If you remember the end of Heroes versus Villains, I believe is in that.
it's Project DNA. Do not assume. Evie says, this has never, Evie says, I've never seen anything like this. Mm. And Deshaun says, it busts the possibilities wide open.
Yeah. Right.
Which very much sounds like what you're talking about. Yeah. My first thought was, is this something that kind of like what we saw in Fiji, where basically, they got to a merge, but then they were divided into two groups, then they competed in the groups, and then only half of the merged tribe essentially went to tribal. So not everyone was voting, and it ended up screwing a player over. Mm-hmm. Because this is an abbreviated season, they need to get through some players faster. We've already seen this before. Two tribes went to tribal. What if we saw something similar where it's a merged tribe, but it's two teams on the tribe and it's still individual immunity, but both groups within the merged tribe go to tribal with their own configuration of voters. And I think that you're right. I could see a scenario where Deshaun, who wanted to take one of his players out, because again, this is in a normal spot, 6v6, where not all of the six on the Luvu side are potentially, super locked in. You're looking at potential flippers where somebody like Erica is potentially a liability. If he has the ability to, whether he's in the majority or the minority, take out Erica. Now you're heading to the real merge where it's like 11 or 10 or however many people. And you don't have six people on your tribe. Maybe you have four. And Yasa has four. And now all of a sudden it's not a given that that Uwa chooses Yasa over you. And vice versa. So I think that's a very good call in terms of that potential outcome.
Yeah. You know what was I thought of too, like an idea of a twist of something that it probably won't be this, but what it would be so interesting, and you have to think about the mechanics, is you do something like this where it's 12 people. And instead of dividing into two groups, you do some kind of individual and challenge, whether it's endurance or whether it's some kind of puzzle obstacle thing. And the last five to finish go to tribal council. So you wind up in this situation, though, where players may throw it. They might go, well, if that person's already dropped out, maybe I need to drop out so that I can, be in the numbers. I wonder if something like that would be interesting sometime where you had more agency of like figuring out how to make that work than just a split like Fiji where it just anyone could get randomly screwed. It'll be interesting to see what it is. I it's so weird with all the days, it was hilarious in this episode where they're just like, we made it to day 10. Who would have thought? It's like what an achievement. It'll be interesting to see what they do, whether it is just the thing from Fiji or if it's something else.
Yeah. All right. So above Erica, I have Heather still at a four. We saw nothing from Heather. There's no. I'm at a four because of a secret scene you got of Heather, four episodes ago, where she talked about making up a dream, and so it's just below average.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I put her at a four too. That's why I say I think she's slightly ahead of Erica, just because we haven't seen any reason to suggest that she's going home. But like, it's not even so much from the perspective of like some kind of the edit that we haven't seen anything like. It's almost like you don't want to get too caught up in the edit, but it's like if she was secretly running the tribe, like we'd see it, like we'd know by now. Like it's pretty obvious that she's not going to be the strategic force to rival Shan for whatever reason. Now that may have just been because of positioning, or it might not be all her fault. We have no idea, but yeah, there's not much you can say in terms of. It doesn't feel like we're headed for a huge moment here.
Yeah. Okay. Who do you have above Heather on this tribe?
Next is definitely Nasir for me.
Yeah, that's where I'm at too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I put him at, I would give him a five. I really think he's in, I don't love his position at all, which is a bummer because he's such a great character and he's such a rootable person. But like we were talking about with Xander, it's actually like even worse for him. And I still put him in a better position just because I think he's got some more options and different things. And I think he's potentially has a better chance socially, maybe, and has a better chance to maybe win some of these challenges. But like he's got an idol that everybody knows about. He's a proven immunity threat that everybody knows about. He's on potentially the big tribe that is the threat. And so all these things. And like you said, even though, you know, based on what she said now, it feels like Liana's going to use the idol stealer on Xander. She might just use it on Nasir.
It's a very good chance. Right?
It's still possible. It's still possible.
She should in most scenarios.
Yeah. So I still put him at a five because I think he's a likable person, and I could just see a scenario. Maybe he wins a couple of immunity challenges early and finds a way, but I don't know. I for whatever reason, I feel a little higher on him than Xander. Maybe I shouldn't, but I felt that way. I felt like I wanted to give a five. But yeah, I don't love his spot. I just think that it's a perfect storm of why you would vote this guy out at the merge. As a merge boot, you're just like, how is this not the guy that you go for? But we'll see. And again, he hasn't even totally engendered trust with the people on his tribe. I don't think Deshaun or Danny are itching to get rid of him, though. I don't think they're itching to get rid of him, but he doesn't seem to be in with them.
Yeah, I'm exactly where you are. I gave him a five. I love him in the game, and I love that Danny and Deshaun confided in him about throwing a challenge. Like,
yeah,
for so many reasons, this episode is great for him. Danny and Deshaun confide in him. He gets an idol that activates. This is all great stuff. However, we're also in the same episode reminded in the very same scene where Danny and Deshaun confide in him, his reluctance to throw the challenge seems to solidify with Danny that, again, I can't work with this guy.
Yeah.
And he gets an idol, but everybody knows about it. And an advantage is introduced where it can be stolen, and it should be stolen from him.
So
it's just like, I said it before, it's like one step forward, two steps back for this guy.
I mean, what does it say about the state of the game that all the players, except for Shan, who got idols, they're like, oh, tough week. You know, it's like, it's really bad. This new advantage is really rough. Two guys got idols activated, and we're like, well, now they got an idol, so they're really in trouble. You know, it's like, it's really unbelievable.
Yeah. All right. So above Nasir, but only barely for me, I did put Sydney. I also gave Sydney a five, which was the same thing I gave her the week before. There's really no strategic update on Sydney this week, so it's all the same stuff. I think that she seems to be positioned pretty well on her tribe, but she's rubbed people the wrong way before, and I'm not sure, you know, where she goes from here.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to go up to a six, but I think it's a five because I think, despite the idol thing, I think she's going to be seen. We see her as a provider. She's going to be seen as a physical threat as well. She's going to be really good at a lot of the challenges. I could really see a scenario where she wins an early endurance competition or something like that. Like you could just see her winning the first immunity challenge individual or something like that. So, and again, we haven't seen socially that she's really been able to be loved, even though she's in great with Danny and Deshaun. Like you said, Tiffany was rubbed the wrong way by her, that other players on her own tribe. I just feel like it's a five because I do think she's at a spot where it's hard to see her her surviving long in the merge. And we just haven't seen that strategic. You know, we just haven't seen her approach the game in that way where you're like, well, she might be able to outmaneuver, Ricard and Shan or Evie or someone like that. I just don't see it at this point. And I think she'll be a big threat because of her physical skills, which is the main thing we've seen highlighted in the show.
Yeah. All right. Who do you have after Sydney? Who's between Danny and Deshaun? Who's your number two?
Yeah, I think for me, it's Danny. Mm-hmm. I think it's Danny. I think he feels, and the number is an interesting one. I feel like I'm going to give him a seven because I worry about players from this tribe as a whole. And the only reason why he is above the other people, you know, he's a jump from Nasir and Sydney. I feel much higher on him than almost anybody else on the tribe, but he's still a threatening figure. You know, he's still a physical beast. You know, he's still someone who I can see, and I think he's going to seem like the de facto leader in some ways as well. Maybe it's Nasir, but I could just see him in that situation. And he's played great up until this point. I mean, there's no world where he was going home, I think, if this tribe went to tribal multiple times. But I just worry about his ability. And I think maybe he should have been a little bit more open. I mean, I know they still kind of tried, but I don't know. They maybe should have been a little bit more interested in throwing this challenge, because I worry for someone like him who seems like such a great player, such a charismatic guy. But it's hard to imagine that with his you know, how kind of, you know, how much he seems like a leader and how much he seems like a figurehead and how strong he seems to be physically. I don't know. I feel like he's in a tough spot I just don't see him getting under the radar at any point.
Yeah. I almost went up to an 8 for him because I was happy that Nasir seems to feel good about him now. And if Nasir's not talking about targeting Danny, that's a positive for Danny, you know, upward momentum there. But I think what you said about heading into a merge soon is dead on. I think that he will be seen as the biggest target for an opposing side to take out. He doesn't have the connections that Deshaun does to Evie, and he, you know, he's the football player. He's gonna. I think you're right. He's gonna be seen as the leader. And none of that is great for him. And I agree. I think that ultimately, even if it does help Nasir feel like they trust him, I think that throwing that challenge was more valuable than getting Nasir slightly more on board. Because, I mean, imagine a scenario where Luvu throws this. Now, one of Luvu goes to Advantage Island with probably Liana. Maybe it's Danny or Deshaun. Hopefully it's, you know, hopefully it's not the same thing where it's like somebody hasn't gone yet. Then they have the potential to get that steal and an idol. They have the potential to bond with Liana. They have a 5-person tribe, Yasa with a 4-person tribe, and Uwa with a 3-person tribe. There's still not a lot of incentive to take out Uwa if you are on Luvu or Yasa, but if you have a connection there, if you have multiple connections there, Evie and Deshaun and Danny and Liana or something along those lines, you're in a much better position. Plus, you have already lost somebody who would potentially flip on you. You're now down to 5. You're less threatening in that way. I think there are a lot of different ways where losing this challenge would have been a lot better for them. But there is still the possibility, again, of this merge thing working out for them, depending on the twist, giving them another opportunity to take out one of those players. So overall, I'm still pretty positive on Danny. I like him as a player overall. Definitely, I think when it comes to who's the merge boot, I'm definitely looking pretty hard at Luvu, and I'm looking at Danny. I'm looking at, you know, Sydney. I definitely think it could be one of these people. Deshaun, I have at the top again. Still an 8. Still a great spot. Again, no real update on Deshaun other than the fact that he should now, as long as he remembers those phrases. But even if he doesn't, like when you hear, I feel like a quote on AstroTurf, like that sounds like one of those phrases. They must have been activated. He must know where all the idols are, including Nasir on his own tribe, including Shan and Xander. That's great. He has the connection to Evie and he has dirt on Evie when it comes to Xander. So even if he can't get Evie and Yasa to flip, maybe he can get Xander to flip on Yasa with his idol and extra vote, which could be huge. So he has ammunition to really help out Luvu in a merge situation. And I think he's shown himself to be capable strategically of coming up with moves that would benefit him in that spot based on what little we've seen so far. So I still feel very good about Deshaun.
Yeah, no, I feel good about him. I feel like I definitely feel the best about him of the tribe, clearly, and you agree. Because I think he's shown to be the most strategic, to be the most flexible. He's thinking about new options. Yeah, we're winning a lot of challenges, but is it better if we lose? He's looking at these options. And for the same reason we've said about this a lot, so much of this is who's going to have that second chance to rebound? It's like we talked about Evie. Who's not going to get taken out when they're on the wrong side of the vote? You know, we've seen players like Natalie Anderson, these people, they can be on the wrong side of the vote once and then they pivot, you know? So there can be second opportunities, even if you wind up on the wrong side of the vote. It doesn't have to be a straight march. And I think of all the people on this tribe, that's what I see with Deshaun. I could see a world where he loses Danny, he loses Nasir, but maybe he can still make some noise in this game and target the right person to go after. So I like his spot right now. I don't see him going anytime in the next couple of weeks. I don't think he would have gone anywhere. I definitely think he's probably one of the last two people. If you want to look at this tribe and make a mock scenario, we don't have enough info, but you imagine they go down to two like Ua. I could have definitely, my money would be on him to be one of those final two. And so probably him and Danny, but who knows? I still think he would have been better if someone tried to turn on Danny. He might have been able to avoid it. So yeah, I like his spot. It's going to be fun to see, and I think he seems flexible. I like his potential to adjust to the new phase.
Yeah. All right. Well, there it is. We got through all of the players there in the Stockwatch. Again, a great episode. Yeah. I'm really enjoying the season. I feel like if we're able to keep this energy, for a little while, I feel like this could be a really great season. I think we'll probably get some fun energy at the merge, and then maybe that will last a little bit, and then that's where it might slow down. That's where it has the possibility to slow down. I think that, you know, part of what's been so fun is, again, that we've gotten down to three and then two. Like, that's so exciting, and you don't get it very often. We should get it more often. but it has been really fun, and I'm really glad that we did get it. And there's been so much to talk about and talk through. So,
Yeah, it's really exciting, and it's a fun episode to talk about when you know there's going to be a big shift in the game. There's a lot to predict. There's a lot to decide. And yeah, look back on this episode and be like, oh wow, we were totally wrong and all this different stuff. It's fun to think about. And yeah, it's just been so fun having Survivor back. And this is why I love Three Tribes, because when you look at if they merge, you know, it might not get stale for that long, because you're not talking about one side winning out and then having to take time to eliminate the other. You know, there's always going to be fluidity. And even if, you know, we lose Sydney, Nasir, and Danny all in a row or something, or Erica, you know, it's like all of a sudden you're going to be like, well, I mean, is Deshaun really the next boot at that point? Probably not. Probably someone's going to use him. Shan or Ricardo's going to use him to take out a bigger threat like a Xander or something like that. So I'm hopeful that we're going to see a constantly moving game.
And casting has been so on point, where we lost back to back Brad and JD, who are such big characters, and it's okay. Like, that's the thing. We're able to lose like a big character every single tribal. You know, even Jeannie, I feel like, she wasn't really in the episodes until like last week or so. Mm-hmm. But when she came into the episode, she was a compelling character. And that's like, that's just the strength of this cast. Like, I feel like Shan is like by far my favorite on the cast so far. But if we lost Shan at the merge, I would be like, now I'm curious to see where it goes. Cause like, there's so many other people that we can shift to, based on what we've seen so far, that it's not like the season would be over if we lost Shan. Whereas like in other seasons, it's like, you've only got a set amount of big, you lose them, it's over.
Yeah. And the little things we've seen, I mean, that little episode we saw of Erica was fun. She was devious. She was strategic. She was trying to play the game hard. You can imagine a scenario where maybe she would have gone home or something, but she would have been a great character if that tribe had gone to tribal council a bunch of times. She seemed like she was really entertaining and someone who was really there to play hard. And so maybe we'll see some of that going forward. So yeah, even someone like Erica, who's one of the people we've seen the least amount of, you see the potential there for her to be a great person to watch play the game.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts on the episode, Brendan?
I mean, just overall, just kind of what I've been saying, it's so great to see the show back. It's great to see. I feel this way that even though there's a million things you can say about this advantage or that advantage, it's always entertaining. It's always exciting. The best parts of the game always shine through, whether it's social interactions, whether it's strategic moves, whether it's possibilities, whether it's all this different stuff. So I'm really excited, and I'm just really fascinated to see, and I'm fascinated to see this in tandem with 42, because, you know, what you were saying earlier in the podcast about they threw like everything at the wall for this one, right? It feels like they put like every, it was interesting to see what they thought worked, because we'll see in 42, we'll be able to kind of see, you know, which ones do we see again? Do we see a bunch of all new stuff? Do we see a similar format? So I'm just really excited for the next couple seasons of Survivor. And as you said, the casting's been on point. It feels like we're going to get a great winner no matter what happens here. It feels that way.
Yes.
But we'll see.
All right. Well, that's what we have for you today. Nice long podcast here on the Stockwatch. Hope you guys enjoyed it. You can, of course, find me over on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. Here in October, I just started playing some horror games, some story-based horror games. So you can check that out, as well as, you know, some other streams here and there. And you can find me on Twitter as well, at Armstrong Taren. Brendan, where can people find you?
Yeah, Brendan KJ Meyer on Twitter and Instagram. I've been working on some different acting things. Should have a couple movies coming out next year at some point. One called The Friendship Game, which is like a horror film. Another horror that I'm shooting right now. So those, I think, are trying to land maybe sometime next year. And for people in Canada, I'm going to be on the second season of Tribal, which is a show on APTN for people in Canada, which had just started the second season. I'm not in the first few episodes, but I have like three or four episodes of that. So that's the acting stuff. And then other than that, just hanging out and enjoying watching these shows. And thanks so much for having me on, Taren. This is awesome.
It's always a pleasure. Always great to talk to you.
Yeah.
So thank you guys so much for joining us here today. And I will see all of you next time.
Yeah, Taren's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taren and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taren's update for Survivor.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News and World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.